Blog Talk Radio.
He is the last of his kind. All that remains of a once powerful nation. Some think he is a myth. Some believe he is the chosen one, who will bring balance to a world at war. And some will stop at nothing to destroy him.
Out to the Summit of the Moors, August 16th through the 18th, 2013, located in Jacksonville, Florida. 3 days of executing and planning of executive plans for 25-year agenda, operating as an economic unit. The presenters will be Shem El of the Tamarain 2 Project, Dr. Ali Muhammad and Minister Inki of the Black Genetic Tour, Sundiata Amael, Professor Asif Deanham L, Tahaka Amana L, Abundance Child, Fatima, The Alchemist Shabazz, Messiah L, and more. Topics will be the execution of urban geoponics, creating independent distribution systems, creating independent economic systems, genetics, private security force, the wholesale and manufacturing of natural products, Moorestown, creating one in every state. Moore's Eastside Farms, putting one in every state. You do not want to miss this summit. It is very enlightening, empowering, and most of all, it's applicable. Everything that we talk about, we do. Summit of the Moors, August 16th through the 18th. Log on to www.summitofthemoors.com. You can register for free. The summit is always free. You can also get your hotel room, which will be on the river at the Wyndham Hotel. That's www.summitofthemoors.com. The summits are always free. See you at the summit.
It's now official, Moors. The brothers and sisters have been contacting me all over the United States asking me, when are you guys going to get something to help us deal with the Internal Revenue Service? I'm here to tell you, officially, we do. Go to http://www.newfreehelpgroup.com. You see, to get rid of the Internal Revenue Service package. Right there, waiting on you. Okay. Now, this is the breakdown of this thing. What we got to understand is the Internal Revenue Service is a private corporation not connected to the United States government as a country. And it's operating illegally. Go to www.newfreehelpgroup.com and if you're interested in doing that, go ahead and contact me before 7 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. 904-303-9061 before 7 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. Get rid of the Internal Revenue Service packages, now officially available. Thank you.
Welcome, Moors, and Moors Talk Live 100. I'm your host, Tahaka Omana L. Bay. And tonight we're dealing with part two of destroying student loan debt. This evening we're going to be dealing with what's an alternative for education. And we're also going to deal with the fact of where we are now financially as a nation of people so that we will know exactly what we should start doing. Now, after the first hour of the broadcast, the phone lines will be open. All you got to do is raise your hand and let me know what's on your mind, and I'll open up the line so that you can get in. But the first thing we're going to do is we're going to hear from Dr. Warren. And the reason why I want to run this first is because this deals directly with where we are now, so that will let you know about the education that you're planning on trying to invest in. And you'll know what you need to divert your income to now in order to get ready for some things. Because if you got this thing in your mind where I'm going to spend $10,000, $15,000, $20,000 on sending my child to college, my question is, for what? All right, so let's take a look at this thing, and afterwards, then you can make the decision of whether or not that's something that you ought to do. But the first thing we're going to deal with, we're going to deal with the relationship between the parents. So we can go directly down into what the parents should be doing, what the economy is like, what they should be doing with their money, where they should be putting it, what you need to be doing to prepare for certain things, and all of that. But we're going to deal with the relationship first, and then we're going to go directly down into this thing so we lay all the cards out about where you should be putting your money when it comes to education. Okay? So y'all hold your hands.
Production funding is provided by A. Reddix and Associates Health Information Resource Center, offering short-term training for long-term professional careers in medical coding. HIRCVA.net.
Discussing the issues and celebrating the successes of the African-American community. This is Another View.
Hello, everyone. I'm Barbara Hamley. Welcome to Another View. This is Father's Day weekend, a time when we celebrate dads for their love, guidance, help, and nurturing of their children. But at a time when 72% of black children are born to unwed mothers, we wonder, what's going on with African-American male-female relationships? Why are there so many fathers, but so few men in committed relationships? Here with some answers, we welcome back Brian Hawkins, coordinator of the Fathers in Training Program, along with therapist Kevin Childs of Kevin Childs Counseling Services. Welcome back to the show, gentlemen.
Thank you.
Last time we were talking about kids, now we're going to talk about women,
okay.
Men,
mm-hmm.
relationships. It kind of all goes there together.
Yeah, no question.
But it is Father's Day weekend, and we think about our dads, and we think about our fathers. And what's going on from a male perspective in terms of relationships?
Well, I think when we start thinking about Father's Day, I think a whole lot of things are really occurring. For those of us who grew up without sound, significant men in our lives, we do have children, we begin to think, is this something to celebrate? You know, is somebody going to say to me Happy Father's Day? And then I start to think personally, internally, am I doing everything that a father should be doing? But if I've never been taught, and I've never seen anybody model that type behavior, then I could stumble a bit.
Mm-hmm. Kevin, what do you see as the biggest obstacle towards, you know, people coming together and staying in a committed relationship?
Well, part of it, I believe, is what Brian said, models. Mm-hmm. A lot of times there are not enough models for folks to base the norms on. And so if we keep seeing something different than the father in the home and being there for a long time and treating his significant other in a way that's going to be respectful and loving and those things, caring. And then we're going to struggle. We might get our norms from the media or from our buddies, and sometimes, you know, entertainment is just that, entertainment, and it's not necessarily reflective of real life. And then we also have the fact that if I don't know a lot, it's not much I can teach you, you see. And so then where are we getting our norms and our and our ideas on relationships from.
Well, we know that people come together. They procreate. I mean,
yes,
because
absolutely.
Of that, you know, 72% of black children being born to single mothers.
Right.
So we know that that's not the issue.
Right.
But what do you think is the biggest obstacle towards taking that beginning and carrying it long term? Is it communication?
Well, I think communication plays a major role in that. I believe that, of course, we know that people are going to get together. That's a given. That's a normal thing. But mm-hmm. I think when we get together, what are the expectations?
Absolutely.
What are we talking about when we get together? See, it could be one thing that we're getting together because we're sexually attracted to each other physically.
Mm-hmm.
But what's that child? You know, because, see, we can think about that before we do that, right?
Mm-hmm.
We can say,
mm-hmm.
I don't mind going out with you and being with you, but marriage is not right now here for me. I don't want any children.
Well, you know? And that's an interesting point, because don't you have to know yourself and kind of what you want to do first before you can move into that?
Yeah, I agree with you 100% on that.
Yeah.
A lot of times people go into the relationship looking for happiness,
mm-hmm.
and I think that while it can add to where we are, who we are, and those types of things,
mm-hmm.
we need to find some happiness in and of ourselves,
mm-hmm.
so that we're not dependent on someone else. There's too much power to give to someone else who may not even be adequate enough to give you that, okay?
Mm-hmm.
We have to find some way within ourselves to find some happiness, to feel good about ourselves, and in that way, we can go into the relationship on equal footing,
mm-hmm,
as opposed
mm-hmm.
to if you're talking about leverage, needing you for my happiness, and
mm-hmm.
that kind of puts you in a bad situation, almost desperate.
Because at some point, that's going to become an issue within
uh-huh.
the relationship also.
But Barbara, also, that if we are looking for love, let's start from the beginning of the relationship, once
mm-hmm.
you have a child, especially a young lady, not only just young men, but young ladies, they start to look for love in all the wrong places if that father has not been significant in their lives. So if he's there, whether he's there or not, he's still some type of role model.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of people don't seem to get that. When he's there and he's working hard to stay involved in the family, a young lady gets an opportunity to see a man, although he may struggle from time to time, he doesn't run away. Okay,
mm-hmm.
She'll get an opportunity to see him when he does go through conflict, how to mediate that and get through that process and still be there for the family.
And that's why it's so important, though, for children to have both the mother and the father there so that they can see ultimately how they should be treated mm-hmm. moving forward if it's a positive relationship.
If it's a positive relationship. And I also think that people get divorces and they separate and they have children out of wedlock. I want to say that if a parent and a parent, mother and a father, can still have a healthy relationship, they don't necessarily have to be in the same house.
Mm-hmm.
You know, well, we all want that ideal situation, but we want it to be positive. But many times folks do not plan on staying together. So we're promoting, can we co-parent? That's what we're promoting.
Mm-hmm.
And how do we co-parent and stop focusing so much on our own individual needs and begin to focus on what the children need?
Mm-hmm.
So, and you have to work through that. That's a process, and you need training around it.
So, all right, you're in this relationship. You have a child.
Mm-hmm.
How do you start that conversation about co-parenting if you're not going to stay
right.
together? How do you start that conversation?
Well, the major hurdle is understanding we're not going to stay together. Okay, that's the major hurdle because, well, I may feel that way. You may not.
Mm-hmm.
And we haven't had that. Or I may be a little reluctant to say that because that might mean the end of this relationship.
Mm-hmm.
And I like it as it is. You may want more from it than what it's currently providing. So if I tell you, I think this, I like it like it is, I don't think I want to get married now,
right.
then I'm running the risk of dissolving that relationship. So that's a major hurdle,
mm-hmm.
to be able to say, come together when Brian talked about expectations.
Mm.
We need to have the same type of expectations.
You know, I want us to get to a point in our community, and I wonder how we do this, where our young people think about this conversation, the
mm-hmm.
are we going to be together, you know, who's the right man for me, who's the right woman
yeah.
for me, before they have the children.
We'll definitely
you know,
change the world if we could do that.
Exactly. But, I mean,
yeah.
because isn't that a major issue that we're facing right now?
All
is
right.
because we keep, you know,
okay.
the girl gets pregnant, the guy stays or doesn't stay, you know, and so there's a disproportionate expense, expectation,
uh-huh.
you know, on the parenting,
sure.
the parent who's actually there.
Mm-hmm.
So if we could get them to start thinking before you even get to that point, here's some things that you need to look at. What do they need to look at?
Well, I think it starts in the home initially then. You know, it starts with the parents. Sometimes we wait too long before we have that conversation. And I think that what we need to do is we need to go ahead and start talking about it. We live in an information age, Barbara. Mm-hmm. So you know that information is all around. Kids as young as this two-year-old that I have, she see things and she's able to look at it and see it and internalize it to an extent. Mm-hmm. Now, you have a 12-year-old who's coming home and letting themselves in the house. What are they looking at on TV? What is entertaining them? What type of conversations is she having or he having on the way home from school? Mm-hmm. Now, the 12 or 13-year-olds I talk to, I know what they're talking about. It's not just basketball, hopscotch, or any of that. It's about who do you like? Are you going to do it? That's what it's about. Hmm. You know, so I think it falls mm-hmm. on us.
And so when you say, okay, mm-hmm. absolutely. So that's where it begins right in the home mm-hmm. and begin to have this conversation early, like we said, and talk about and kind of normalize what expectations ought mm-hmm. to be and those kinds of things. Also, though, we don't want to ignore the fact that there are institutions in our communities.
Yes.
That can be a forum for those types of things.
Especially if there isn't a dad in the house.
Yes. Isn't it dad in the house? Yeah, with or without.
Yeah,
absolutely.
Right. With,
mm-hmm. with or without. There are mm-hmm. institutions in our community where maybe we can build in mm-hmm. conversations about relationships and self-esteem, and what you see on TV may not be the norm, and what you hear from your friends may not be the norm, but mm-hmm. here are some other ideals and some other things to talk about. We look at a church, you look at Boys and Girls Clubs, you can look at some schools, after school activities, lots of different places.
Mm-hmm.
Where? Yeah, sure, all types of programs.
There's always a discussion about the number of marriageable men who are available,
yeah.
You know, within the black community. And then you also have the struggle of the disparity in income.
Okay.
And so forth.
Sure.
So, and women, you hear women talk a lot about, you know,
yeah.
well, do I go the blue collar route, or do I,
right.
you know, and then some people say, well, that's lowering your standard. I mean, there's all that dynamic that goes on in there. But as you look at helping people to have healthy relationships, what kinds of questions should they be asking themselves and each other as they're mm-hmm. trying to pull this relationship together?
Mm-hmm. Well, I think even before the kind of questions they're thinking about before they mm-hmm. meet someone ought to be, what are the types of things that make me happy independent of someone else?
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, what are my principles?
Yeah.
What are my
mm-hmm.
ideals? Those kinds of things. Am I someone who is ambitious and want to be upwardly mobile?
Mm-hmm.
And that's one thing. And if I run into someone who is not that, maybe they have a skill, but they're content in working where
yes.
they are.
Mm-hmm.
Yes. Is that going to drive me crazy? Right. Or can
right.
I live with, be okay with that?
Right.
That you know, and if that's going to drive me crazy, then I need to not look at getting into a long-term relationship
mm-hmm.
with
right.
someone whose ideals don't match mine.
Don't match yours.
Those types of
right.
things.
Yeah. Well, now usually we've been taught now to get a list and write all the things out. And as you're going through the dating, you're checking these lists, just checking your list off. And I say, even if you are able to check most of those off, you're still two separate individuals. There are going to be times where you're still going to have difficulties. And see, many of us don't anticipate that we may have conflict. Oh, he's perfect for me, they say. You know? But then you get in this relationship and things happen, call life, you know.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Children come. And he grew up on this side of the tracks, and he became successful because he worked hard to do so. You grew up in a two-parent household, and you went to the best of schools, and you all met each other. Well, he has a different mindset as to how he wants his children raised than you. So when you talk about physical discipline, you cry, because that's not what we did. My father didn't do me. He says, well, these two boys need somebody to help them to understand that, you know,
mm-hmm.
hitting is not my thing, but sometimes corporate discipline is used in these relationships. Money issues, just like right now, when we're going through what we're going through in this nation, he came in with a lot of money, a lot of visions, and a lot of plans, but now he has no job. So how
mm-hmm.
do we deal with these, what I call bumps in the road? This one here is a large bump when you lose a job.
Mm-hmm.
So it has to be about something beyond all of that. It's about this internal relationship that I have. First of all, knowing how to love myself, like Kevin talked about, but also
mm-hmm.
the things that I love in you. And those things that I love in you, when things get bad, those are the things that I anchor myself to. But
mm-hmm.
that means, it's called, for me, it's a spirit of total commitment. I don't care what happens, you have to be totally committed. Now, many of us have never had to commit quite like that. Mm-hmm. And so that has to be.
And if we don't see our parents or our grandparents with that total commitment, then that's a new skill for us that we have to learn.
Right. Some of the expectation is that because I'm considered a good catch, if you don't do what you need to do and it don't happen, I can go somewhere else. I can leave this. So what the total commitment is no matter what goes down, if we're in this together, then we're together. You know, so yeah, I may have difficulties communicating sometimes. Sometimes I may go into the other room and feel like I don't want to be bothered. But that's a short period. That does not mean that I'm leaving. But if she's seen him or someone in her life go into another room, she may just go crazy. What does that mean to her? Mm-hmm. It may mean, oh, he's getting ready to leave me. And then she may do some things that might help with you.
So talking is critical.
It's so critical.
And, Kevin, what do you tell, so if you have a daughter,
and I do,
you have a daughter, what do you tell your daughter about how, from a father's perspective, what her expectations should be for a mate?
Find somebody like your daddy.
Yeah, he's a good
role model.
He
ain't gonna be good to me, but he'll be all right. Well,
I love it.
Well, that's, you know, part of it is to look at the things that you like between myself and your mom, okay, and the things that you like about our household and how we do things and how I treat you and those types of things. Mm-hmm. And if those things kind of feel good, feel right to you, then look for those types of things in the man you want to consider to be with, that type of thing. And so it's me having confidence, this personal, me having confidence in the type of atmosphere I created in my home with my wife and that type of thing, and knowing that, not perfect, but knowing that there are some qualities there that my children can look at and will look at anyway, but understand that they can use that to build themselves and build their lives and their relationships, and encouraging dialogue, family dialogue, you know, not necessarily as a group, we don't have to say that, but feel comfortable enough to come talk to me or your mom. Your brother and sister, they can talk those types of things, and we discuss those types of things. So what I say to her is see the things, and the things I like, I tell her to look for. And it's kind of old school for me, but is he willing to work? Okay. Does he respect you himself, and does he respect you?
Yeah.
So those things are very important to me.
And Brian, do you have a son?
I have several sons.
You have several sons.
Four sons.
Okay. Yeah. Do you have that same conversation, or do you have a different conversation with your sons?
Yeah, I have a similar conversation with my sons. But, you know, it's kind of interesting because as I talk to them, they go through stages. You know, there are times when they hear. I used to teach them just a few things, and one, the basic stuff, was common courtesy.
Mm-hmm.
You know, but as they have gone through these stages, common courtesy kind of went away. Thank you, please, you're welcome. In relationships, when we're trying to establish this in a foundation of a good relationship, you have to have some respect. Mm-hmm. And we've taught you to say, open the door. We've taught you to say thank you, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And
go back and kind of remind them.
Yeah, because they're doing it different. Here's the other piece that gets me when I'm dealing with my sons and talking to them. They're texting. They're not talking. It's something to be said about having an individual conversation like we're having face to face. You know, you can read my body language, you can tell how I feel about you, you know, if you can assess it good. But they don't pick up the phone, they text. And so I'm just saying there's a distance for me.
Yeah.
But I do raise them to be extremely respectful. I have them to understand that first of all, that's not getting anyone pregnant. Because once you get someone pregnant in our family, then it's your responsibility as a man to provide this kind of care. So and money, finances. And so they're just out of college, they're struggling. but
they're doing okay.
Yeah, well, that's what some of the neighbors say, they're good kids.
And that's a good thing.
Yeah,
the neighbors say that.
Right.
We only have a few minutes left, and I want to get to co-parenting, the discussion of how you come together to parent a child. I know that I'm asking a lot in like 2 minutes, but give just some basic steps in terms of if you and your significant other are struggling over how you're going to raise your kids.
Right.
I'll start with you, Kevin.
Okay. Well, the communication process, and Brian mentioned before, common courtesy goes a long way because that shows respect.
Right.
And
that
means we can talk. Hopefully we can talk without a lot of the other things getting in the way, you know, rolling eyes, ignoring, interrupting, all those types of things, which can go both ways. So we want to bring common courtesy to the process. we also want you to be able to adequately express your thoughts. Okay, so we need to, don't walk away holding, I don't want to say this because I'm concerned, or I'm, say it, but say it in a way that somebody can hear it.
Yeah.
Okay, they can receive it. Those are the kinds of things we're looking at doing. Of course, listening is going to be critical. So those are the types of things we talk about. You know, come in there with common courtesy. Come in there willing to express what you're thinking about and feeling in a way that somebody can receive it. Listen. We have to listen. And not listen to try to find chinks in the armor.
Oh, my.
But listen with a mind to understand.
To understand what the other
person
is. Yes. So let's use corporal punishment as a quick example. The wife absolutely disagrees with it. The husband says, sorry, this is where we got to go. Where do you, what's the middle?
Do you really have to go that way? You know, that's the question. Let's talk about how this might impact our children. If we can, and the last thing, Kevin just spelled C-A-L, and the last one was maintenance. After we are able to do those things, now we have something that we can build on. This is putting the work in now. In this relationship, because we have different of opinions, we have to have a space that we're willing to, a safe place, open area, where I can voice my opinion in a way that you can receive it, and you can voice your opinion in a way that I can receive it.
Mm-hmm.
So collectively, we're going to come up with something that we know is conducive to the healthy raising of our children. And so that's how you work through it. Many times, folks don't come in with those tools. They don't have those tools. They haven't practiced those tools. Don't get me wrong. They come in with strengths and some strengths, but those particular tools they may not have practiced. You know, and so what we're encouraging co-parenting, when we're encouraging co-parenting, it means that I have to respect who you are. What was it about her that you liked her in the first place?
You know? What got you there?
And the thing is that can you find and pull out her strengths versus looking for her weaknesses, and can she do the same? Now, here's the other piece. Get with a good support system, because if you get outside of the support system that's conducive to this, they can tell you some things that might hurt your relationship.
Got you.
Yeah.
Happy Father's Day, gentlemen.
Oh, yeah. Thank you very much.
Thank you so much for coming back. And we're going to continue to talk with you all, because I think these are just some concrete skills that people need in order to build our relationships and make our community stronger. I appreciate you being here. And when we come back, we'll pay tribute to Hampton Roads dads through song. But first, here's what's happening in Hampton Roads.
Okay, Moores, we're back. Now, before we go down into the broadcast, the first thing I wanted to do is let's deal with the thing in the house with the relationship before we even start going dealing with it in the school. So we got that part straight. But now let's talk to the sisters a minute, because we got something we want to lay on you, and this is strictly for the sisters. Okay?
Wonderful. Thank you so much for being with us today.
Well, I'm honored that you asked me to come.
That's wonderful.
Appreciate it.
That's wonderful. And we've seen some of the work that you've been doing over these years, and it seems to me that the first thing we should ask you is, how do you remain so consistent? Because it seems that so many people do their best work at some period, and then what they end up doing is simply trying to relive that work instead of doing more work.
Well, first I want to say something to the ladies in the audience. I want you ladies to understand that African women, and you're the genetic reproductions of our mothers, were considered the most beautiful women on the planet for thousands of years by all of the civilized peoples of the world. The Greeks sought so much of your beauty that they named two star constellations after you, Andromeda and Cassiopeia. The two most beautiful star constellations are in the heavens. They say that they have all of the beauty of the setting sun, hair which is alive, and a figure incomparable even today. So I don't want you to think that just because we went through 400 years of horror where they were saying you were ugly, that you believe that, because you're the most beautiful people. Well, you are imitated by everybody. So I want to say that before we get on to the discussion.
That's right.
That's right.
Incredible.
In answer to your question,
yes.
Now you saw that because I'm old. I forgot the question.
His memory's better than mine.
It's an ongoing process.
Right.
one thing led to the other.
Mm-hmm.
And so when I did the video called The Songhai Princess, I was really testing whether or not drama really worked, because I had found out that drama is the only thing that changes attitude,
mm-hmm.
and attitude changes behavior.
Right.
So in 1990, I created a little video, almost animated, about a little Songhai princess that was kidnapped by the Wicked Witch of the Mountain, and she was rescued by her lover, who was a medical student at Sankore University.
Mm.
Now, but all during the film, they saw the beautiful homes our mothers and fathers lived in West Africa. They saw the beautiful buildings, the universities. So all of this was subliminal. The impact on children was so great that I said, we've got to do a major motion picture.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what we are doing now. We're producing a major motion picture called Whispers of the Medallion.
Mm.
So it's an ongoing process.
That's right.
The reason.
That's right. Mm-hmm. So many people get sidetracked. It seems like you don't get sidetracked, though. You're focused on
There's a reason for that. And the reason is called the territorial imperative.
Mm.
Mm-hmm.
I hate to ask this question because it's embarrassing. How many of you who are African Americans, how many of you know the African city and country from which your ancestors were born? Except my daughter.
Not one hand went up.
Not one hand went up.
Mm-mm.
I asked this question of 500 whites. How many of you know the city and country? I was teaching at a white university just outside Philadelphia. Every hand went up.
Mm.
They knew not only the country from which they came, not only the city, but the borough
Wow.
from which their ancestors came. Now, how come they know and none of you know? Here's the reason. And here's the reason why I am different. The reason is that the South Carolina and North Carolina plantation owners went to Germany to find out how they could control our fathers and mothers on the plantation, because they were getting out of hand. They were burning the houses down. They were killing white folks. They were doing everything negative about being in captivity. They were never slaves.
Mm.
They were prisoners of war, the War of 1591. So what happened was they sought the advice of an expert in Songhai history. Now, his name was Johann Blumenbach. And he was the head of the Department of History at the University of Göttingen in Germany.
Mm. Mm-hmm.
And how many of you know this? I know you was taught this in college and everything, all you college folks. Mm-hmm. Well, when they sought his advice,
right. mm-hmm.
they said, do they know that they're the Songhai people? So the plantation owners who traveled over there to seek his advice,
mm-hmm.
said, well, of course they know that they come from the great Songhai Empire. Well, that's your problem.
Mm.
You can't let them know that they came from greatness, from grandeur, from beauty,
mm-hmm.
from sophistication. You'll never be able to control them. So the plantation owner said, well, how can we prevent it?
Mm.
I mean, the mothers and the fathers would tell the children, say, you came from Timbuktu, and you came from the city of Jane, and that's where we were born, and then the Europeans came over and invaded us in 1591 and marched us to the seas, to the waiting ship. Said, man, you can't allow them to teach that to their children.
Mm.
They said, well, how are you going to stop it? Here's how you do it. Here's why you don't know where you're from. Blumenbach said, what you do, as soon as a boatload arrives, take the babies out of the mama's arms,
mm.
send the parents to a distant plantation and work them to death and raise the children to believe they came from a jungle. They won't know the difference.
That's right.
How would they know?
That's right.
Their parents are gone.
Mm.
Yeah, now, here's the difference between me and you.
Mm-hmm.
When they captured my grandmother, I'm not going through, you heard the beginning of the story. My grandfather was a lawyer and a sculptor in Benin City, Nigeria. And the English kept on coming over stealing his sculpture.
Mm-hmm.
Wow.
Some of his sculpture ended up at the Art Museum in West Philadelphia, where they came to show it off because it was world-class sculpture.
So you, mm-hmm. have you been able to see this sculpture?
Oh, sure.
Wow.
Yeah, we've got some in the book.
Mm-hmm.
But anyhow, what happened was his wife hassled him and said, don't fight the English when they come over. Just let them have the sculpture. I'm pregnant. And they'll kill you. Then I'll be a widow. And they'll put me on board ship and take me over there where they're taking all the rest of those prisoners of war. But my grandfather, whose name was Mwale.
Mwale.
Said, I'm fighting them. I'm not going to let them steal my sculpture anymore. And he gathered some of his fellow sculptors. And they fought the English when they came over to steal. They were always stealing some. And they killed him. Of my grandfather and put his wife, his pregnant wife, my great-great-great-grandmother on board the ship. And the ship was named Jesus, by the way.
That's deep.
I've been angry ever since. Well, at Jesus, not at Jesus, but at and on the way over, the baby was born.
Wow.
All right? Name of Diane. She named Diane. Now, it was bound for South Carolina. How many of your ancestors came from South Carolina? Raise your hand.
Oh, boy.
A whole bunch of folks.
Mm-hmm.
They were bound for South Carolina. But in 1808, this was 1813, in 1808, a law was passed by Congress forbidding more importations of the Songhai people. We're
That's
the
right.
Songhai people.
Right.
See, Blumenbach said, don't allow them to even learn that
That's
they
right.
came from the Songhai
That's
Empire.
Right. We're going to try to breed them here on this continent
That's
rather
right.
than continuing
That's right.
the cultural memory.
They don't even let them learn the name Songhai.
Mm.
Because then they'll start investigating. Then take away their ability to read and write. Pass laws against them learning to read and write. Then they can't learn anything about the Songhai Empire.
Mm-hmm.
And they passed the law. 200 years of law not allowing blacks to learn to read and write. Well, anyhow, in 1808, this law was passed forbidding any more importations of Songhai people.
Mm.
Now, nobody paid any attention to that law at all except one little group called abolitionists.
Mm-hmm.
Now, the abolitionists put their money together and they bought a ship. And they patrolled the seas looking for prisoner of war ships, which you all were trained to say slave ships. They were slave ships. They were prisoner of war ships.
Very important.
Were coming, very important distinction.
That's right.
And when we teach our children, they were never slaves.
That's
they
right.
were children, descendants of prisoners of war.
Mm-hmm.
Like McLean. He
That's
was
right.
a prisoner of war.
That's right.
He wasn't a slave.
That's mm-hmm. right.
He got captured by the enemy.
That's right.
On the way, this abolitionist ship captured the ship that my great-great-grandmother was on. So instead of this baby being taken from my arms in South Carolina, the ship was towed to Trenton, New Jersey.
Mm.
And of course, Nzinga, who was the baby's mother, my great-great-great-grandmother, taught the baby that her father was a world-class sculptor,
mm-hmm.
that her father was a lawyer, that he went to world-class universities. So I was trained from babyhood, you know, that we've got to right this wrong.
That's right.
Mm-hmm.
That's right.
Mm-hmm.
So I was, you know, it's your job because you were spared by just an act of God, an act of the ancestors,
mm-hmm.
to not let the baby being taken from Nzinga's arms. And the baby grew up and she had a child. Her name is Mary Diane Thomas.
Mm-hmm.
And she was my great grandmother. And she helped raise me.
Wow.
And so she told me the story when I was a kid. You see. So that's how I know.
Wow.
Where we're from.
Wow.
That's right.
Okay, Morris, we're back. Now, as you see, based on what this gentleman just said, the importance of knowing who you are prior to going to any college or university in this country, there is absolutely no comparison. No comparison. And once you learn that, then you can set your eyes toward those who enslaved and murdered and maimed, and you will know what to do. That's why it is so important for you to know who you are instead of turning your brain over to somebody else to put some education in it. Your education begins with knowledge of self. Once you get the knowledge of yourself, now you officially able to go in and start listening to what somebody else got to say about other things. But as long as you know who you are strong. And when you are tampered with, you are a force to be reckoned with. Now let's deal with the student loan.
It's a weird feeling, you know, because I wanted to go to school and I wanted to get my master's degree. The rest of my life is dramatically altered. Can I get married? You know, and real questions. Can I honestly have children because of a loan? And, you know, I don't feel like I can do that.
I think it's easier for financial aid officers to say, well, it's not our responsibility. We're giving you all the information, so, you know, you have to figure it out. But what does an 18-year-old know about private loans and direct loans? When I was signing those promissory notes, I mean, I didn't really look at the interest rate. I didn't really care. I just wanted to get the money so they wouldn't kick me out of school.
There's absolutely a student loan bubble. And if it hasn't already popped, it's about to.
Offered me a great amount of money, and so I decided I'm going to go. I've got financial aid. I've got a grant from the university. It's not going to be that expensive.
I had wanted to go to that film school forever. I was just so excited about it for years. I mean, it was my kind of my biggest dream. It was like somebody gearing up to try to get into Harvard Law, and I got my acceptance letter, and I couldn't believe it. I was really on cloud nine, and no matter how much, at least at the time, that it cost, I was just like, I'm just going to find a way.
All I know is that I wanted to go to school, so I had student loans available to me, and I took them out.
The birth of student loans actually happened by accident. In 1968, Reauthorization of the Higher Ed Act, there was a proposal to put in a tax credit for middle-class families that had two or more kids in college. And at the last minute, they came up with this counterproposal to do a guaranteed federal student loan instead of a tax credit. You know, they never would have thought that it would have grown to be the largest single source of money for tuition that it is now.
Student debt has become a much bigger issue over the last 15 to 20 years. It used to be that you could go to a state college, work truly part-time at minimum wage while you were in school, and full-time in the summer, and if you came from a low-income family, you'd graduate without debt. Right now, that same student would have to borrow to get through school.
Public institutions, state schools, tuition has risen really quickly, especially in the last 10, 15 years. And it used to be that grants that you don't have to pay back were available to cover 75% or more of the cost of an average four-year institution. That sounds like a fantasy to us now. It's completely switched. So we've gone from relying on grants to relying on loans, putting the burden of paying these huge costs onto students and their families.
I was lucky enough that I was able to receive a Pell Grant, a Cal Grant. Work studying other federally funded financial aid programs, and I'm really happy about that. But at the same time, I still have to work 3 part-time jobs throughout the year. I worked almost 30 to 40 hours a week during the school year and more than 60 hours a week during the summer. And somehow I still ended up with more than $30,000 of debt after I graduated.
I have Perkins loans and direct loans, and I'm a work study student. I have another job as well on the side, and I still have to take out private loans. I currently have around $40,000 in debt, and by the end of my 4 years, I would probably be a little bit over $60,000 in debt.
A generation ago, the Pell Grant covered almost 3/4 of the cost of going to a four-year school. Today, it covers around 1/3. What that means is your average Pell Grant is probably going to cover, hopefully, the cost of books for a year and not much more than that. So a low-income student who gets a Pell Grant still has a lot of cost to cover, and they don't have parents who can help them cover some of those costs.
It never occurred to me that I would not make a lot of money after going to law school. So repayment never seemed like a daunting task to me, because I just always assumed I'm going to a great law school, I'm going to graduate, have a law degree, and get paid lots of money, and I could pay back my loans quickly and easily.
I just kept looking at these bills piling up. They were getting higher and higher, and I was looking at least another 2 to 3 years full time to complete my degree. And also, I didn't see any way that, you know, I was going to be able to pay these back. And I thought, well, I really should start looking for a journalism job and go to work.
I was actually at a training for USSA, and I started to get a really bad headache. And that headache turned into an even worse headache, and I couldn't go to school anymore. And I ended up having something called a pseudotumor cerebri. And so I had to drop out of school my senior year of college so that I could have brain surgery. I had to leave school for an entire semester. I tried to catch up in the summer, and I just ended up with double the debt because the school wouldn't give me back the money because I had gotten sick at the end of the semester.
The reality of higher education in America today is that only about half of people who begin a degree program actually complete it within 1.5 times the allotted time. Those people who do graduate, 2/3 of them take out student loans. People commonly talk about the undergraduate student loans and the average of about $20,000 for people with a bachelor's degree. But for those in graduate school, the numbers get much, much bigger. For master's degree recipients, the number's in the 30,000s. For law students, I believe the average is up over 100,000. And for medical students, it's about 150,000 in both federal and private student loans.
I received an offer to work as an assistant district attorney in Brooklyn. And my starting salary was $36,000 per year. And I had to make a decision between paying back my student loans or paying for rent. I couldn't do both. My rent was $1,000 per month, and I was earning about $1,800 per month, and there was nothing left to pay for student loans, so I placed them into forbearance.
I got my first bill for my student loans, and the first bill was a total of about $1,000, and it was quite a shock. I was expecting to see a bill around $500 a month. After that shock, I had 3 months warning that my payment was due, and it took me that 3 months to save up $1,000 to make my first payment. And after making my first payment, I owed more money than I owed before I made my first payment, after interest charges had been applied.
After I graduated NYU, the payments were scheduled to be, I think, somewhere around $1,400. I went into a default, and that was a huge addition to the loan at that point. And currently now, it's roughly about $2,000 per month.
people always talk about the million-dollar diploma, right? The advantage of your degree over a lifetime, if you get a bachelor's degree versus not getting a bachelor's degree. But that advantage has actually gotten bigger since the 1970s, not because the bachelor's degree people are earning more, but it's because the people without a bachelor's degree are earning less. So the top line is really flat, the bottom line is going down, and that advantage is getting bigger. But for the people who are just getting a bachelor's degree, the bonus or the payoff of that degree has not actually been growing. It's actually, in the last decade, been getting a little bit smaller.
When I initially did it, I had no idea what forbearance was. All I knew is that I didn't have to pay back my loans at that time, so I was more than happy to do it. So for the next 5 years while working as an ADA, my loans just increased. They ballooned. Like I said, I owed about $65,000. By the end of my five-year tenure, I had probably an additional $25,000 in debt.
I called Sallie Mae and I asked them, how did it get to be $54,000 when originally it was only $32,000? Oh, well, that's your forbearance. I said, my forbearance? I don't understand. Well, you signed the loan papers. You should be responsible. Do you want us to send them to you? I said, can I renegotiate the loan? Oh, absolutely not, unless you go back to school. Excuse me. I was like 60 years old. Would I really want to go back to school? I don't think so.
Little did I know that the lenders are more than happy to let you put your loans into forbearance because of a racket called compounding interest. Basically, what it is that the interest continues to accumulate while the loan is in forbearance, and that interest gets tacked on to the principal. So the interest increases exponentially as the amount gets tacked on to the principal. So it's sort of a snowballing effect. Once the process of forbearance starts, your loans start to grow and grow and grow. And that's what happened to me.
The Citibank Student Loan Corporation would send me these notices, and they'd say, you are on deferment, or you're on forbearance, or you are on your grace period, having left school. This is just to notify you of your interest rates. And then they started sending me one saying, this is just to notify you of a change in your interest rates. And it was like watching the odometer on a car.
There's no limit to what they can charge in terms of fees and penalties if you go into delinquency or default. And so since they have the power to take your $12,000 student loan and turn it into $40,000 of penalties, why wouldn't they do that? I mean, why wouldn't they want to charge you absolutely as much as they possibly could, knowing that they'll never settle? You know, knowing that courts have found that people's Social Security payments and their federal disability payments can be seized to pay back old student loans. Or even their disaster relief payments from the federal government if you're in an earthquake or a hurricane. So, you know, knowing that they're going to get their money, they might as well put it down that you owe as much money as possible. And that sort of seems to be the thinking behind their delinquency and their default policies.
Unfortunately, very little data are collected on private loans. However, one recent indicator is that a big for-profit college company called Corinthian Colleges told its investors a few months ago that they were going to make about $130 million of their own private loans to their own low-income students in this fiscal year, and they expected defaults to be around 58%.
It's really sort of a three-headed beast comprising the lenders, Congress, and the universities. You have the universities who are raising their tuition, but you also have this lending industry that is sitting there, you know, funding Congress to the tune of, you know, tens of millions of dollars per year, who also are pushing to get the loan limits increased, and also are frankly responsible for having all the consumer protections that were taken away.
For whatever reason, Congress has decided to treat student loan debt completely differently than every other type of debt. So you can discharge your gambling debts in bankruptcy, but you can't discharge your student loan debt in bankruptcy. And that makes absolutely no sense.
And that one sort of exception to the bankruptcy law, I think, really provides an indication of the extraordinary power that the student loan industry has in our political system.
Once you made that decision to sign the promissory note and become a Sallie Mae customer, you're done with them. You can't get rid of that loan. There's no discharging it in bankruptcy. And they make more money the worse you do with that loan. They kind of want you to be in delinquency, and they kind of even want you to be in default, assuming you keep paying it back. And you probably are going to keep paying it back because you don't have any choice. So if you just look at their basic business model, they don't want to be nice to you. And so all of the people that I've heard from, it doesn't seem like Sallie Mae ever makes a mistake in anybody's favor. If they ever make a mistake, it's against the student.
You know, if you look at it in the roundhouse, you're going to say, okay, it was $30,000 to go to UNR for 3 years. They now say that I owe about $90,000, so it's tripled.
I originally borrowed $46,000 from my private student loan, and I think when we spoke a year and a half ago, I owed approximately $80,000 to $90,000. And now that figure in July of 2009 is about $122,000.
I borrowed $35,000. I've paid back almost $26,000. And I still owe $57,000.
So in relationship to the cost that I have now, it is $200,000, which is maybe one of the few times I've ever said it out loud. Uncomfortable. I was actually kind of worried about saying the amount.
So right now, you know, I'm in about $80,000 in student loan debt. I don't even know how much medical debt I'm in because my mom kind of keeps up with those bills because it's just too daunting for me. And I'm in about $5,000 in credit card debt. So I do this work because... I do this work because I don't want anybody to feel the way I feel. You know, I don't want the banks to call, you know, their job and tell them that they owe them so much money. And it's difficult. And these people out at our conference, I just want them to understand that they don't have to go through this. And that, you know, if they want to go to school, they should try to get a scholarship or they should try to get grants. And they should definitely take out money from the federal government because the private loan industry, they don't care about people. You know, when I told them, look, I don't make that much money. I make $34,000 a year. There's no way I could spend $600 or $900 a month paying just for loans. And they said, well, there's nothing we can do about it.
I really feel like I am not going to have any legitimate credit the rest of my life. And that's a hard thing for a number of reasons, and like future purchases and the girl that I'm living with right now in this apartment. Crazy about her. She's the best person in the world. I mean, really. I was like, you know, I don't know if I can continue this relationship because I don't want, you know, I don't want to... You know, I just don't want to bring you into this thing with me.
I was talking to a friend of mine about this, who happens to be a loan officer. And he tried to reassure me that, you know, things will get better. That we are not a country with a debtor's prison. But the more and more I think about it, maybe we are, and we just don't know it.
Most of all, we need your sense of hope. I don't need to tell you that your classmates are worried about whether there are jobs after school. That some of your former classmates are fighting wars all across this globe. That this year alone, more than 400,000 young people will not go to college because they can't afford it. Yeah. And yet, despite all the bad news you read online in the morning, I believe you've got hope.
It is imperative that consumer protections be returned to student loans. People don't realize that the most basic fundamental consumer protections that we take for granted with every other type of loan simply don't exist for student loans.
We're constantly being told about how far behind America is lagging compared to other industrialized nations in terms of math and science and whatnot. But we're not paying for it. We need to actually put our money where our mouth is.
The federal government spends about 7 times as much on people over the age of 65 as we do on everybody from the age of 0 to about 25. As our country continues to age demographically in the next 10 or 15 years, younger people's issues, and particularly higher education, are going to be perpetually pushed to the back burner. So the onus is really on young people to organize and to agitate for their own causes and their own beliefs.
We need to see more students lobbying to their elected officials. We need to see more students understanding how their state and federal budgets are affecting their experiences in higher education. We need to see more students draw links to higher education to even broader economic justice issues.
What do you want out of your higher education? Do you want to go to school for little to no money? Tell us how we should message it, and we'll do it.
On January 29, 2009, I was watching the news, and I believe that was the day that news broke about the CEO of Merrill Lynch and his exorbitant Marie Antoinette-like office redecorations. And this was in the wake of the $700 billion TARP bailout. Instead of throwing trillions of dollars at the banks, insurance companies, and other financial institutions that were responsible for the mess to begin with, I thought we as a society would be better served by forgiving everyone's student loan debt and putting hundreds, and in some cases thousands, of extra dollars per month, every month, into the hands of middle-class educated consumers. So I wrote what I thought was a pretty good essay laying out my proposal, and I posted it to a group on Facebook. And as of today, there are over 233,000 members of the group. I recognize how radical and dramatic the proposal to forgive the student loan debt of all Americans really is. I get it. I'm basically asking the taxpayers foot a $700 billion bill. We've already done that several times in the last year.
We need to not be quiet. We need to not suffer individually in silence about this issue. We need to come together. We need to solve it.
I was watching 60 Minutes one Sunday evening, and it was Alan Kalnitch talking to Leslie Stahl, and they said that there's a guy that's starting a grassroots movement in Washington State.
Well, we're just asking your college students, sort of at random, about the student loan issue. Do you remember ever having a choice of who you borrowed the money from? Do you remember actually making a decision about who to borrow?
No, we just need money, so the school came up with like a plan, and that's what I've gone off.
Student Loan Justice is the first organization to stand up and be vocal from a grassroots perspective about the problem.
Before student loan justice was in existence, the student loan issue was rarely, if ever, covered by the popular media. Since we've started, however, we've been featured in dozens of television shows, including 60 Minutes, Frontline, 2020, and others. Our mission is to convince Congress to restore standard basic consumer protections to student loans. Getting Congress to move, now that is another challenge. But you know, anybody, anywhere, can go down and get a meeting with either their elected official or, you know, their staff. I mean, I suggest if they feel more comfortable acting in a group, that they should come to studentloanjustice.org. And, you know, they can find dozens, if not hundreds, of people in their home states that they can plan and coordinate with and, you know, get together with and act jointly with.
I actually think that if a bunch of us, you know, outed ourselves and said, I'm in $80,000 worth of debt, you know, then somebody else would say, I'm in $45,000 worth of debt. And then we would actually realize that it's the banks, it's the private lending companies who are the only people benefiting from these programs. And all we're doing is pushing ourselves deeper and deeper into debt.
I am hopeful that that growing awareness and that growing sense of a consumer movement will help make sure that for those who need to borrow, borrowing is safer and less burdensome, and hopefully that there's less need to borrow because we have more grant aid and better financing of higher education.
We have to have doctors, we have to have lawyers, we have to have microbiologists and we have to have newspaper reporters and public school teachers and professional photographers and all of that. And those are all jobs that, those are all careers that require a significant amount of education.
An educated society is a more just society. The more of us that are educated, the better we can all do, because we can all make better decisions.
Pessimism is an option for people that aren't actually in immediate danger. Once you get into immediate danger, optimism is the only option. You have to be working on solutions. If you're not working on solutions, you're just making things worse. And so that's really been a credo that I try to live by. I used to be much more of a gloom and doom person by nature. I imagined a lot of very scary scenarios, and I would get hooked on sort of apocalyptic, you know, literally apocalyptic ideas about, you know, the future of capitalism, the future of the country, the future of the planet. And all of those things are true, but I think to the extent that you believe that there are real problems in the world, energy is best focused on solutions.
In this economy, a high school diploma no longer guarantees a good job. That's why I urge the Senate to follow the House and pass a bill that will revitalize our community college. And let's tell another 1 million students that when they graduate, they will be required to pay only 10% of their income on student loans. And all of their debt will be forgiven after 20 years, and forgiven after 10 years if they choose a career in public service. Because in the United States of America, no one should go broke because they chose to go to college.
Back. Now, at the outset, for those of you who have student loans, they've already told you you cannot discharge a student loan. In other words, you cannot accept it for value, pay to the treasury, you can't do none of that. What you have to do, and in order for you to get on with the business of living, instead of working to make a living, get on with the business of living by canceling the contract and get rid of the debt, period. If you're spending $3,000, $4,000, $5,000, $6,000 a month on that, you need to get rid of it. Get a mortgage, get rid of it. Cancel the contract. That's how you do it. Go to www.newfreehelpgroup.com. That's all you got to do. Go to work. We got brothers and sisters that's been inquiring about it, and I'm going to tell you, just like I tell them, in order to get rid of this thing, you're going to have to cancel the contract. The whole thing operates on contract, okay? Now, for those of you who have questions or comments, go ahead and raise your hand. We're going to take a quick break, and we will be right back, okay?
Darkest of night, the moon shining bright. Directly into the month of July. For those of you who have problems with your mortgage, you got student loan debt, you got that child support hanging on, and we're going to cancel those contracts. And for those of you who are trying to do that, before you do anything, call me at area code 904-303-9061 before 7 p.m. Now, if you just want the most powerful archives in America, go right there to www.newfreehelpgroup.com. That's www.newfreehelpgroup.com. And give me a call, Tahaka Amana L. Bay at 904-303-9061 before 7 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, and we'll get you some aid on that thing, okay? All right.
Life, wisdom. I'm Psyche Truth correspondent Karina Rachel, and today on the Truth Docs, I'm continuing my conversation with Dr. John Breeding. Today we're talking about the public school system, and in this video, specifically, the differences between public school and homeschooling. So I want to start by asking you if you attended public school or if you were homeschooled. So leave me a comment and let me know. Thank you so much for joining me today. And I guess let's go ahead and start. I know in a previous video from your Leaving Home series, you discussed homeschooling and the public school system. So can you maybe elaborate on just some of the differences between those two different education systems and maybe the benefits and problems with each one?
Well, I'm a big fan of homeschooling. I think that, I'm a big fan of homeschooling, and I'm a big fan of a specific kind of homeschooling, I guess, you know, because really homeschooling just really means home living, right? And it means a lot of different things to a lot of different people. It can be anything from taking the standard public school curriculum and then just bringing it home and doing it at home, you know, because, of whatever reason, a lot of times because you want to protect your child from the insidious influences of the schools or whatever, mm-hmm. but you haven't really thought about the curriculum and the structure. You know, you just want to do it at home, you know, and, or it could be, you know, buying a specific curriculum, you know, that's a little different because you think it's a little better, but still you're going to implement it and make sure the child does it, you know, and to all the way to this other, extreme, which is called unschooling. Typically, it was the approach favored by another one of my favorite educators, John Holt, who wrote How Children Learn and Why Children Fail. And John Holt talked about unschooling, you know, which is this other extreme in which you're not schooling a child in the sense of implementing a thing where you're going to funnel somehow this education into this child, you know, and make them do it the way that you think they need to do it. Instead, you're going to deliberately undo that and allow the child to follow their own lead, right? And then you're a resource, basically, you know. So that's called home living, and that's called trusting that you don't have to make children learn. You don't have to motivate children to learn, you know. You don't have to make children responsible, you know. You just have to recognize that those qualities already exist, and then all you do is allow them to unfold and maybe resource them appropriately at times, right. You know. And I like it.
Yeah, and I think that's such a huge point that you made there, and you made this in the previous video as well, that children innately have this motivation to want to learn. They are interested in everything. I mean, and you think about a baby, just every single thing that they see, they're just enamored with. So yeah, there is this idea that you have to school the child, you have to teach them and, you know, kind of force them to learn. But that really does kind of go against what is really quite natural of the child, which is lots of interest, lots of questions, you know, constantly wondering about new things. So this idea that maybe you could encourage that and take advantage of that rather than kind of, you know, battling that down and hushing that and
children
challenging
are born
that.
To learn. The children in the first 3 years of life, every child learns more than anybody that we might call a genius, you know, in later life, you know. Mm-hmm. And children typically go into school, you know, excited and curious and that, you know, it's not amazing that continues. What's amazing is that large numbers of children by a pretty early age learn to hate school and to be bored with it and to be apathetic with it and get to the point where, for example, you know, even the people who are successful in school, meaning they graduate from high school and they go to college and they enter my classes at college, you know, they're conditioned in this place of passivity. And so it's called, what's going to be on the test? What do you want me to learn? What do you want to study? And it's called to go, what's up, class? What do you want to talk about today? What do you want to study? And it's like, people who are conditioned that way, they're just like that, you know? And, or check this out and think about that and then bring up your questions next time. And it's like that, right? And that's evidence of being conditioned towards this intellectual and emotional dependency, toward this passivity, toward I'm studying this because I have to get a job or because you want me to, and this is the way to do it, as opposed to, this is what I want to know, this is what I want to learn, because this is what I'm expressing in my life right now, and this is where I want to go. Mm-hmm. It's a very, very different energy and expression.
So you mentioned that you are in favor of homeschooling, but a very specific type of homeschooling. Can you maybe go into a little bit more detail about, you know, the particular aspects of homeschooling that you think are most important?
Well, it's not even so much a particular type. It's more an attitude and approach. You know, I'm not really down with the taking the curriculum and imposing it on the child. And this is the way to learn. And I'll tell you if you got it right. You know, mm-hmm. What I'm saying is that it's a child-centered deal. It's called, what do you want to study? What do you want to learn? What are you interested in right now? Or just watching and then facilitating that. And if a child is interested in worms and dirt, you know, then you provide experiences of worms and dirt, you know, mm-hmm. And maybe you start a worm farm and figure out how to do that, you know, or maybe you take a trip, you know, to East Texas and get into the big thicket and you get into the really muck and find all the creatures there and dig into it and stuff like that. You know, it's like you're a resource, you know, who's facilitating, you know, something at a level that the young person is at. And but the idea is that all the specifics, you know, called the ABCs, you know, the reading, writing, arithmetic, whatever the curriculum says you're supposed to learn, those things get learned when you need them. You know, and so be prepared to support that and facilitate that, but that's different than in imposing this on it. So I like homeschooling, you know, but different things work for different young people, you know, and
right.
And the thing is to trust in the child and trust in their inherent intelligence and zest and curiosity for learning, and just do whatever you can to protect against the suppression of that.
So in terms...
Okay, Moses, we're back. Now, if anybody got any questions or comments, go ahead and raise your hand. What we're going to deal with now is we're going to take a look at where we are now. What's going on now? What should Moors be doing now? We done examined the educational system. We have examined the homeschooling system. Where this gentleman said that we should observe the child and find out what the child like and what his interest is, and start building on that. And of course, I don't blame him in the face of the fact that the educational system in America is crumbling. And you got people with college degrees all over the United States that have absolutely no money. They have a whole lot of information in their brain, but if you ask them to tell you who they are, they cannot give you an answer. So therefore, we have a problem. Mission Control, we have a problem. So let's look at where we are, and right now that will tell us what we need to start concentrating on doing. After we look at the underbelly of where we are right now, we could be dealing with Dr. What's his name? Lee Williams. I'm sorry, Lee Warren is going to speak, and then we're going to deal with him and lay this thing out. And then you all raise your hand, let me know what you all think about this thing.
All right, Dr. Warren, I got to ask you before we get going. You talked about some tree or herb that can cure cancer, but they don't want to talk about it. What's the, you know, something you were mentioning when I walked in?
Oh, there's a tree that you can. It's called the Graviola. That's Graviola. Graviola. It's located in the Amazon jungle. You can look this up. Mm-hmm. And matter of fact, Purdue University has done extensive research on it, and the National Institute of Cancer has done extensive research on this particular tree. They spent 7 years trying to resynthesize this particular chemical that had shown very promising effects against cancer. Low toxicity and very little would kill cancer cells and those that were drug resistant. They couldn't synthesize it because every time they would synthesize it, it wouldn't be as wouldn't have the same efficacy as a tree. Chemical in the tree. So what happened after 7 years trying, they put it on the shelf. So what happened was there was a whistleblower, somebody in the company that knew that this tree was very important to humanity, and his conscience wouldn't leave. So he sneaked out and got a copy and gave it to a few magazines, and they published it. I think it was in 2000. So for basically for 10 years, most people don't even know anything about this tree.
So the bottom line is that the powers that be don't want to cure cancer.
The powers that be, it's money to be made in cancer.
Big money. So the people who do the whole cancer, the whole cancer thing, if you will, is nothing but big pimping.
That's all. Don't know what a pimp. And most folks don't have the knowledge of herbs to know some. That's a whole bunch of. It's about a good 300 or 400 basic cures. The FDA said they ain't no cures, but they are stuff that could cure cancer. But it's not authorized by the federal government. Or FDA.
Because big business, they want to make money.
They want to make money.
Okay. All right. Now, anybody got, before I get going about the economy, anybody got a question for Dr. Warren about the economy? And should we leave America and blah, 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 blah? I'm scared. You know, what do we do? What do we do? Anybody got a question for Dr. Warren? Yeah, go right here with your question, sir. Go right here.
Yes, I've heard you mention before about the investment in gold and silver. I understand how important it is. But given the time that we're living in, wouldn't it be best to invest in food because you can't eat
those?
And I think the time is
right. Okay, well, that's very important. It's a good, very good question. Is that food would be probably your most important thing. Most people, let me say, we suggest mainly silver that you should go out and buy. These old silver dollars, the old silver dollars and the old silver quarter, 64 and back, you get as many as you can because what's going to happen, you're going to use that to bargain. Now, what you can do in addition to that, you know, that's just a bother. I mean, you can't take say you're growing greens, you can't take the greens down to get on the bus with.
Right.
You know what I'm saying? Now, you can use it to, you know, but you need that coin to barter with to buy other things that you need, herbs that you may need, or this and that. But my point is that you can grow the vegetables in your backyard. or inside your house. You can grow sprouts. A lot of things you can do to be self-sufficient as this thing melts down. Because listen, just the people down in the Gulf, they're trying to rely on the federal government. They're up the creek.
Well, wait, so you don't believe the recession is over?
No, it's not over. Matter of fact,
I'm being facetious, of course.
I know, we're in phase two of it. What's happening is you have the bankruptcy of the banks first, and insurance companies, et cetera. Now we got nations that are going bankrupt. You know, Spain, Portugal, the pig nations, Hungary, all these nations are having their credit rate lowered. In other words, the nations, with so-called, like I said, the white nations, the former slave nations, the colonized the world, they all broke. They're dead broke. They don't have a nickel for their name. And see what happened, they were so dumb, they transferred all their factories to China, to Asia, to get cheap slave labor. That's like they brought us here for slave labor. They shipped these, and what happened, the whole economy has fallen in. It cannot sustain itself because of the huge debt that these nations have to try to save themselves. They're creating more debt to offset a decline that just won't work.
Now, the traditional Christians, they say this is just a precursor for the return of Jesus. This is the end now.
Well, I tell you, it's the end of a system.
Mark of the Beast and the Antichrist, you don't believe in all of that?
I believe that a system, a commercial system,
right,
that was controlled by Anglo-Americans, it is in its death deal. It's going to totally collapse. That is the system that is actually strangling the whole world. That's the system that you got in your credit card in your box, your debt. They're telling you that your house is upside down. They say, you know what? You owe us.
Regardless.
Now,
upside
your
down.
Wife has to get out the corner and sell something, fine. But you're going to pay us.
Wow.
Because we ain't giving up a nickel. Now, as a matter of fact, the government may save us, but we ain't worried about you being saved. And the folks haven't waken up to the situation that the government can't be saved. I mean, poor Obama, poor man, it's a situation now. He's spending, almost $2 trillion a year just to try to keep the economy going. That means money like this is becoming more and more what?
Right.
He creates more and more money. And you know, you go to the supermarket and eggs, $5-$6 a dozen.
Well, you can't leave the house without $100 these days.
That's it.
I mean, every time I go, I leave with $100, I come back, gone. It's gone.
That's it.
I mean, it's mind-boggling. So, you're not going to join the Tea Party movement, are you?
The folks don't understand that you're dealing with spiritual wickedness. These bankers and oil companies, they literally control this country and the policies that have been set up. Now, how can you have a regulation industry like the SEC? They're supposed to regulate the what?
Wall Street.
And Wall Street. Now, you have a guy named Madoff. How do you swindle $80 billion for how many years?
Years,
and then nobody said, we don't know nothing.
Oh, a lot of folks know.
See?
Yeah, they know.
And you have you got an agency set up to regulate the oil industry. They do just what they want, and not often this thing blows up with no safety measures, no plan B or C.
Well, they get mad at the president, but where's Dick Cheney? That's Halliburton, right?
Listen.
They left Houston. Hey, what's up now? I ain't see you there, man. They left Houston, went to Dubai, didn't they?
Yeah, for tax reasons.
Mm-hmm.
And rules and regulations. So what you have is that these companies come in and do particularly what they want because the politicians are being bought. This is
so going back to the bottom line, the Tea Party is a waste of time.
It's a waste of time. It's a waste
of
time.
They totally misguided.
They totally misguided, and they're going down the wrong path. In other words, they're cutting at the branches, and they're not cutting at the root. The root is the Federal Reserve System and the powers behind the scenes. They have to some way control or return. And those are very powerful forces, and the people are not prepared to confront them at this level, at this point in time.
But has Americans really understood that most of the jobs are paying no more than 5, 10, 15, if you're lucky, $20 an hour? That's like 90% of all the jobs out here. That's the way it's going to be. Most Americans make under $50,000 a year.
That's right.
And it's going to be like that.
Well, that's the problem. They are going to live scrounge like third world. Listen, I had a friend. I was talking to my mother. She was going to the beauty shop, and she was telling me about she was in the beauty shop, and she said had stage 4 cancer. But you know, we've pretty much recovered from that. But anyway, she's telling me, she said, well, this lady does her hair in her house, and she says, well, another lady comes in and just does you know hair on the weekend. I says, well, hair on the weekend? Yeah, she's a professor over at UIC. I mean, I say, you mean to tell me a professor is doing hair on the side? I said, this thing's over with.
That is bad. This young man had a question right here.
I have two questions for you. One comment that I have read that they say 90% of all African American children see some type of foolishness. Then they say
JP Morgan Chase, I wanted to issue out the food stamp. Two, I wanted to, they said that they was, JP Morgan, I didn't hear it clear, but they had did something where they had, silver's supposed to be much more than what it is, and they're keeping it down, they're keeping it low under something like, inside of trading or something. And the third is that I heard that Madoff is just like, he's, I won't say he's a flunky, but the whole system is corrupt. He's just like somebody to go out there to take the fall.
For exactly. Okay, your first one is that, remember, everything has been privatized in America. Right. It's like Mayor Daley, he sold the expressway that's owned by Italians, you know what I'm saying? Some Italian cover, or some merchant, or some hedge fund. So the tollways have been sold. So then when they want to say set up something like the link card, the government will find a private corporation and have it privatized. They will keep all the bookkeeping. So I wouldn't doubt that. I don't know, but I wouldn't be surprised. Now, as far as the last question, the silver is being regulated. Silver and gold are both being regulated, are kept down in price because they do not like competition against what? Against the dollar. This is paper, because they know if people had a choice, if you went to the bank, you was going to cash your check, and there was a bunch of silver and gold, and you said, wait a minute, give me half my check in gold and silver, and the other half I keep in paper. They know people would choose what?
Gold and silver.
That's why no bank is allowed, but no bank is allowed to sell gold or silver.
They just raised my interest rate. I paid my credit cards off on time, but they just raised my interest rate. So your credit's going up, or you can't get any credit. You can't buy a house. You can't buy a car. What are we gonna do?
Well, you're gonna live like the people in Jamaica, the third world. Four or five families to a house.
That's
right. See, and it's gonna be rough and tough. And then people are gonna run up losing their mind because they can't deal with it. See, the scripture, the Revelation says Babylon has fallen. This is a great empire. A commercial system that the bankers had. They strangled the nations. They have raped Africa. They have raped South America. Now we're talking about bankers. And these corporations, now the whole system is crashing on them. Now they say, you know what? We want you to pay for our mistakes.
Mm-hmm.
And the folks are stupid enough to go ahead and people say, a lot of people are losing. And I said, no, we ain't going to pay for your losses now. But you want to keep the profit, but we pay for your losses. So you see then that the system is collapsing, and money as we know it to be will cease to fail, and folks have not smelled the coffee. They begin to know something's wrong, but things are going to, they're going to wake up one morning and find out that bread is, see what could happen, this is what happened. Everybody thinks things are going to get literally, those that know think things are going to get literally bad, worse by worse, little by little, and then other people think it's going to get better, but they don't realize that you got all, you know, most American debt, 50% of our debt, oh, I think it's maybe 60%, 50 or 60% of the debt is held by foreigners. They own our bonds, et cetera. Mm. And at some point, if they keep seeing these treasury bonds and notes being what? You just keep printing them out. At some point, they say, wait a minute, I'm losing what? Money. So I just might as well take my losses. So they can wind up selling the bonds. Interest rates would spike up, and the dollar could fall overnight, could lose 35-40%. So you could wake up one morning and have a bank holiday, and the next day you next when it's all over with, all the prices have went up 35-40% in one day. Mm-hmm. And so that's a scramble to the what? The bank, the grocery store to buy stuff, and stuff is going up, and gold and silver and stuff would just go crazy.
But this could happen this year because the dollar could collapse this year, right?
Well, within a year. I would say within the next 18 or 2 years.
It's possible.
Yeah, they could probably hold it off. You know, because they don't have everybody drink the Kool-Aid and with propaganda hold folks on. But at some point, you can believe, you can stay in a delusion for a while, or you can believe a lie, drink the Kool-Aid. But at some time, reality hits you. When you have $1 billion and a Federal Reserve note, and the dollar lose 10 or 20% of its value, you say, wait a minute, I don't want to lose another 20.
Right.
So at some point, you say, well, it's time for me to cash my chips in. And then when they do that, that would crash the dollar and cause a dollar crisis throughout the world as everybody is fleeing. That's what China is doing. China is trying to take, what do you do with $1.1 trillion in bonds and dollars? You go around the world, you buy what? You start buying gold mine, resources, oil, everything. Contracts with Russia for 25. You just try to get rid of these paper. You're trying to get some solid assets. In other words, I got oil for 25 years. I own this gold mine. I own this. They're going to come to America and say, okay, we're going to start buying land, farms, and everything. And then these Chinese own everything. And then that's when the white people go off. Because they find out that the government sold them out. See, and then things get real crazy. And this is what's happening now, and not only here, but you have riots. Yesterday was Friday, was May Day. Even in France, they kidnapped the bosses now. You know, from Honda and these foreign companies come in and say they're going to lay off people. They kidnapped. They call it boss snapping. See, and I don't agree with that because, listen, they don't understand the greater picture is the Rothschilds and the bankers, the great bankers are the ones they can't get to.
Right.
So these are the people that's trying to maintain a profit. And they are riding in the street, and everybody is saying around the world, we are not going to pay for the bankers bankrupting us. And this is the problem we have today.
So last question, you can close out with the final statement, is that, so anarchy, will the anarchy happen in this country this year or in 2010?
I'd give it another 2010. I would say, as I was down at Can TV, and one of the ladies said she had a TV called Take It to the Streets. And I told her, I said, you ain't going to be long. They're going to take it to the streets. They're going to be in the streets. I'm talking about people are going to be, you have food rides, you're going to have squatter rides, you're going to have all types of rides. And the government and FEMA and Homeland Security, they're prepared. They know what's coming because they can already see in Iceland throughout the world, there are riots already.
Well, this is going to be like the French Revolution because it seems like the poor is not going to riot. Only the middle class is upset.
Well,
and the upper middle class. The poor don't care.
Listen.
Poor have been poor for years.
Listen, when you get hungry enough, you do anything.
As long as they had a link card, they're not going to riot.
The
point is, a link card, you're going to have a problem.
The point is, what will it buy?
Yeah.
Okay, what will it buy?
See, you don't know how much. In other words, if you get bread down to $15 a loaf and you only give them $800, I mean, you got four children, five children. I mean, you got to do something to feed your family. You can do whatever is required. That's what I'm saying. That people, even in Europe, France, everybody is very tense now as the system, economic system, is actually bankrupt, folks. It's insolvent. I don't care who you are. So my suggestion to you is spiritually and psychologically, you have to prepare three ways. Physically, in terms of gold and silver, and spiritually and psychologically, prepare to keep you from your mind from snapping in all this chaos and turmoil. You got all types of diseases and man-made pestilence are being turned loose. You got the swine flu, you got the avian flu, all these are man-made things that are being put on people to thin the flock. So you got that. So in closing, I hope that you take some silence of the words I say and take care of business while you yet have time, because chaos, there's no way that this thing will be turned around. No way, because it's been going too long and the people are too powerful are not going to make the changes that's required to save the little man, to wreck the system. Again, I want to thank you, Mark, for allowing me to come on, and you can always contact me on the Plim line. I mean, you email me at, I think it's plim@plim.org. You can email me or call the Plim line. But it's basically email me. So we'll probably keep this thing going for five or six times this year, but expect things to get continually worse, especially maybe a little uptick in the economy for a while. But again, print money is no solution.
Right.
Give Dr. Warren a big hand. Give him a big hand. He's a man.
That's how they're going to save Wall Street and not Main Street. Now, and I'm giving you a good example. You know, people are just stupid. I mean, here it is. Not, and people say, well, I ain't stupid. I say, listen, here we have General Motors. They go up to the Capitol. They fly up in their jets and stuff, and they have to grovel for $50 or $60 billion. Now, listen, Wall Street, Goldman Sachs, Merrill Lynch, AIG.
Yeah.
They didn't get the people trillions of dollars.
Yeah.
The people, they hadn't even called up. Matter of fact, they gave Paulson, $750 billion with no oversight.
No oversight. Just gave him the money.
Just gave him the money.
Yeah.
And he said he was going to do it for one thing. He did another. They mad at him. Now, listen, you can see then the people on Wall Street are blue line. They're blue-blooded. And these people get what they want. And they don't have to go through a lot of hassle. Now, when it comes to the blue collar workers, you finna catch hail. And that's what the General Motors thing is about. It's a class struggle. And you don't see it other than they say, well, General Motors made all these mistakes and da da da. Well, listen, the banks, the Wall Street bankrupt the whole system.
They made the biggest mistake.
They made the biggest mistake.
Wall Street. And we talked on the phone the other day, and we agreed
that even if GM made the best car, superior to Toyota and Honda, they would still go bankrupt because we ain't got no money to buy no car.
This is a problem that the last speaker brought out. 70% of the economy, 70% of the U.S. economy, folks, is consumers. You and I buy. Now, most of us are up to our neck in debt. We got credit cards to pay off and basic utilities and a mortgage. We don't have, and there's not another ATM machine. You can't borrow no more money from your house.
And the biggest thing, most people.
And they're not going to forgive nothing.
Most of us are afraid that we're going to lose our jobs.
That's the whole point.
I don't even look at my investments. I don't look, because I know they've gone about 30, 40%. I don't want to look at them. So we're frightened. People are frightened.
Well, like the last speaker said, the best thing you do is take your money out of any type of 401k, put it into gold or silver.
I don't have a 401k. I got a mutual fund. That's still bad, right?
Now, listen, the only way you possibly get out of it is in one of those precious metals gold mutual funds.
Yes, I'm thinking about going. I can't name the P. I'm thinking about getting – I know it's paper. It's not tangible. I'm thinking about getting some gold.
But at least as gold goes up, the gold mine stocks go up with it for a while.
And I got to go down to this place in Chicago. They sell gold. I heard this – you told me this silver. Coins, they ran out.
Well, there's a limit. People are now afraid of when you start talking about this paper.
I don't have no paper to help you.
Yeah, but anyway, what I mean by that, the stuff is losing value.
Yeah, here's a dollar.
This stuff is losing value, folks. And the only thing that you could offset it with is with some gold or silver, which most foreigners are buying. As a matter of fact, it's very hard for you to find gold and silver now.
But they said earlier, you got to get my money back. But they said earlier that people are buying guns and safes.
Oh, yeah.
They got, because they were scared to put it in the bank. They said they had, what, about 20 banks failed this year?
23 banks failed so far this year.
This year. Now, this show going to air in 2009. And they say 2009, the economy is going to be worse in 2009 than this year.
Oh, it's going to go off the chain. I mean, folks don't realize, listen. So there is not going to be any jubilee, folks. They're not going to forgive you for. Listen, they not even want to forgive any of the mortgages. They want to forgive any people the credit cards. And listen, well, how do you think the folks going to spend to keep the economy going? Nobody is thinking about Wall Street. They're thinking about, Main Street. They're thinking about Wall Street saving the wealthy, which they call welfare.
Mm-hmm.
I said welfare. It's fair for them.
And they're going to do very well.
Right.
Because the rich, because when the stocks go down to nothing, they can buy pennies on the dollar.
That's exactly.
And even if they went up, only 25%, they dropped 75, only go back up 25, they still make billions of dollars.
That's exactly. Listen, cash is king, gold is king, and listen, the elitists never buy anything retail. They buy it wholesale, pennies on the dollar.
Yeah, they're going to forget about that. Okay, we got another caller. You're on Viewpoint Live. Go right ahead.
Hello.
What's up?
Hello.
Go right ahead.
Mark?
Yeah, turn your TV down. Go talk.
Okay, I got it down. Mark and Doctor, thank you very much. Hey, I listened to your program, Viewpoints. Great. Fantastic. Hey, Mark, you know, the people forget that Bush was never elected on both terms. And what Bush and Mayor Daley do, they privatize, they take all the jobs out, they bring in Walmart and NAFTA. And what's happening now, it's written, and the thing is, we, like myself, I don't have an investment. I'm working. I live check by check. And I'm not going to panic. I'm not scared. I think the people who have to worry are the people who have such large amounts of money, have investments, and have big corporations. And I just wanted to say thank you very much for expressing yourself on this show. I mean, it makes a lot of sense. You know, you put it together. Nothing. I try to read the newspaper of what's going on, and there's nothing in the paper. And the 10 o'clock news is the same old crap. Magazines don't tell you nothing, the truth. And this program it touches right on the main topic. You're hitting right in the heart of it, and we can't get that in the media. The media is also gone, which the doctor always talks about.
Thank you so much. You know, the thing about it, he's right, because if you are highly leveraged, meaning that you got a lot of debt. You in deep doo doo.
Well, yeah, you in deep doo doo. But I'd say this: even if you're in debt, you can't get out. Seek professional help. But the one of the last things, don't lose it. Listen, it's not worth killing yourself over a system that's a game to these folks.
Well, see, that's the whole thing about
they blow the game up, right. They blow it up, they collapse the economy, and they do the same thing over and over. And if you're not wise, you can take a gun and blow your minds out.
My children, they're teenagers, they're 15 and 13, and I try my best because we live in America, and they teach you they brainwash you to spend all of your money, in fact, run a deficit every year. And I try to tell them, please do not get attached to these materialism. You go lose your mind. I got to have them Jordans. I got to have these $5 gym shoes. I got to have a Chrysler 300. That's going to make you go crazy when you lose the shoes and you lose the Chrysler 300. You lose your mind. You're going to beat your children. You're going to kill your wife because you're attached to this materialism.
That's right. Well, see, most people have no spirituality, and the scriptures warn us against the Babylonian system that has driven me and mad. I mean, here you are thinking that paper money is real money. It's not gold and silver. It has no value. All paper currencies has always failed, folks. That's not one paper currency that has never failed. In America, we'll not be exempt from that factor.
Because they see people laugh at us. They say, oh, look at y'all. Y'all got these old, we're not wearing Armani suits or whatnot. Most people in the most Americans, not all, the days of wine and roses is over.
Well, what you're going to live in today is America. When I say America, I mean the whites, whatever. Is that you're going to be in blacks, whatever your color, you're going to have a reduced standard of living. We're probably going to, a lot of people, we're basically going to go undeveloped a third world. We're going to go basically from first world to third world. There's no way that all of these jobs that are being lost, just for instance, when Wall Street collapsed, they laid off pretty close to almost half a million, three to almost half a million investment bankers. These people are making $800,000, $500,000, $600,000 plus bonuses.
That's not a job you can get real easy, investment banker. In fact, those jobs are gone. The kids in college, they were going to Wall Street. Now they can't go to Wall Street.
It's over with. That game is over with. So there is no more financing and high rolling. And, you know, you're driving Maseratis and stuff, and you're getting, you know, five or six. Even the secretary was getting $400,000 for $500,000 of those firms.
I know it's Sandy. We got another phone call. You're on Viewpoint Live. Go right ahead. Caller.
Hello.
Go right ahead. You on?
Hello.
Hi. Can you hear me?
Hello.
Go ahead. Turn off the TV.
Hello.
Turn off the TV and start talking.
Hello.
Or maybe they can't hear me. Okay.
Yeah.
All right. Hey, cut them off, Bill. Reset it. Bill Godowski's in the control room. Whenever you're ready, Bill, just bring the caller in. The bottom line is that people, you know, if you never had any money, if you never really had anything, you may not even notice there's a depression.
You wouldn't notice it, but I mean, the idea you'll be able to deal with it more readily than somebody else that has a PhD and he'll get cut. Even some of the university professors, I don't know how they're going to make it. Nobody can afford to go to college no more.
Oh, wait, tell me about it. I know because I talk to public school students quite often here in the city of Chicago, and we go to neighborhoods like Inglewood and Roseland. And those of you who are outside Chicago, those are some of the worst neighborhoods economically.
Right.
The people are very nice, but economically they have been in the Depression for 30 years anyway.
That's it.
I mean, you go to Roseland, if you've been older, I saw Roseland as a kid when it was all white.
Right.
I saw Inglewood when I was a kid when it was all white. It collapsed. And like I told you on your show a few months ago, people laugh at Detroit, and I told them Detroit is coming to a neighborhood near you.
That's it.
Caller, you're on Viewpoint Live.
Just a couple quick things. You guys are saying, well, I've been telling people for years that the whole system we have based on paper is an absolute fraud. It's a sham, and it always has been from day one. The only thing that propped up the American dollar was the propaganda machine of the American government. But what I find really kind of intriguing is the fact that on every piece of paper currency that's been in circulation for at least 2 weeks, when that paper currency, the dollar, the $10.
Tonight, I just want to talk to the ladies. Oh, fellows, you're cool, but girls, if you got a good man, you'd better keep him. Oh, I know you're saying right now, what does she know? Who is she to tell me about my situation? Well, I don't know your situation, but whatever it is, you should try to stay together. You know that big argument that you had the other night, remember? Well, today it's not nothing. Just don't let them leave you, honey. So then you'll find out that it wasn't those real big things you loved about her. It was the real small things. Go on and laugh, but it's true. You know,
know, things that you've seen a thousand times around the house but never paid any attention to, like helping with the groceries and helping in the yard and painting and repairing and paying the bills. But you know, now all I have is memories and regrets. I could have given our love a chance to grow, but no, I had to challenge it and be heard. Let me tell you something. That female liberation stuff, I don't know, sometimes I don't think it's worth it. And I'm really feeling kind of bad, y'all. I'm catching hell, living here alone. I never realized, oh Lord, that you mean so much. Catching hell, living here alone. I want you to come back, baby. Come back, 'cause here's where you belong. Oh yeah. If I could replace, that whole scene again, oh well, you know that I would never, never say to him that I love his attitude. And whoa, you know that
W's and Bushes the other day. That kind of signifies where we're at.
Yeah, but wait, let me cut you off. You're very wise in this, but do you believe in the conspiracy theories?
I'm sorry,
Do you believe in Illuminati and other conspiracy theories?
Well, see, conspiracy theories are based on a certain element of truth. And you have to understand that no one's sitting in a big room deciding these things. They say that there are people like the Rosicrucians and the Knights of Templar, and there are other, you know, forms of the Vatican and X, Y, and Z that have all of this information. I don't know of the validity of the story that has come through as to how it's almost like the Wizard of Oz. There's a guy in the background that says they're wielding so much power because of the truth that they have, but as your guest stated, the Egyptians had already signified this data, the scientific data that they work off of, and they're basing a lot of their backwards scientific methods off now. So it's just a matter of them having this purpose to do this is to matter-of-factly control the population, because that's what they need to do.
That's fair enough. Thank you. She's a very wise lady. But the bottom line, they are conspiracy theories, and they are evil people.
Oh, yeah, that all about to the it's just like the idea of the war. I mean, the two powerful lobbies in this country are oil and banking.
Mm-hmm.
The families that control oil and banking. Everybody went out, and I don't demonstrate. People went out and said, we're going to stop the war. I said, you're not going to stop Jack. Go out there, 50 million people went out there. They went to war. See, everybody talked about, we are not going to, the $700 billion, we don't want the congressmen to do it. We ain't. I said, they're going to do it, and if they don't, they're going to crash the system and make you do it, because if they crash the system, you got your 401K, your IRS, and your pension. If it falls in half, the first thing you're going to do is you're going to shout, give them what they want, because I don't want to lose what I got.
But let me just say, let me go back to the bare knuckle stuff. I don't believe the average person in America understands the Federal Reserve. This is the core understanding of all the conspiracy theories. You start from this notion. The Federal Reserve is not part of the federal government.
It never has been a part of the government. And they have the ability to create money and credit. That's why you have in your wallet. You don't have a treasury bill. You have a Federal Reserve note. That is a private bank and is a bank of cartels. All the banks, it's like Bank of America had shares in there. J.P. Morgan has shares in Federal Reserve. All your large banks have shares in the Federal Reserve Bank. So when they got in trouble, they bailed them out first.
Of course. And people, you understand, where does the Federal Reserve get their money from?
Well, part of the money comes from the federal government, but basically they create money out of nothing. It's like you have an IOU and you write IOUs. You ain't got a nickel in the bank, but everybody accepts them as real. But really, there's nothing to back it. And they charge interest on top of that.
And that's the whole key. The money, a lot of the money comes out of thin air because they say, let the free market capitalism work. Free market capitalism. But where does the capital come from?
What I'm saying? Well, the point is, people don't understand it's a simple term called fractional reserve banking. You'll probably hear it sometime. And what that means is, you take the average bank. The average bank, if you put $10 million in the bank, you presuppose the bank can only lend $10 million. But they have a leverage principle. A bank that has $10 million can create $100 to $150 million of loans.
Okay, that's high finance, sir. You're over my head.
So in other words,
wow.
with the $10 million, they actually able to create another $100 million above and beyond the initial $10 million.
But where does the money come from?
It's from a screen. They created out of nothing.
Created out of nothing.
Right.
So that's why people say the only way that America's going to come out of this depression is that the Federal Reserve just has to continue to print money out of thin air.
And what that means, if they continue to do that, that means the money in your pocket becomes worthless.
Of course, that's the downside, because if they print more money, the dollar becomes worthless.
For instance, we told people about 4 or 5 years ago to buy gold and silver. We said, wait a minute, I'm going to tell you, you're going to go to these stores. At that time, you had certain breads like, you just take a loaf of bread, a whole wheat bread. We're selling for about $2.50. Now you go into a store and try to buy a whole wheat bread. Whole wheat, I'm talking about 100%, it's $5.
I know.
And they ain't joking. Eggs is $3 a dozen.
But see, and the
milk is $4 a gallon. And folks say, they don't get it.
And all the people that believe in the conspiracy theories, they think the Amero is going to come and they're going to crash the dollar, take away all your dollars, and give you an Amero.
Well, the whole problem with that is simply that people will not, once they destroy, for instance, your friends, and I break your trust, it's hard as hell for you to trust me ever again.
Ever.
Especially when it's dealing with money and stuff.
Ever.
Well, that's the same way with the government. If this dollar falls, there's no way in the world that they can replace it with another currency without it being backed by some gold or silver. People say, well, listen, I'm not going to put my savings back in all this new currency. I lost here. You think I'm a bigger fool to do it twice?
Now, we're in a huge mess, but before I take another phone call, are we going to get out of this?
Well, the only way that they can get out of it is declare some type of jubilee. And clear the debt off. You got derivatives out there, roughly a one card trillion. They got debt or derivative instruments out there. To give you an example, of what I mean by derivative, the General Motors bonds. You can buy insurance on General Motors bonds, and there's $1 trillion of insurance on General Motors bonds. So if the General Motors bonds go back, you got all these derivatives that's going to pop at the same time. So you got one hell of a mess, as the last speaker pointed us talked about. You got so much deregulation that the thing is wild, wild west. Those people have to have, first of all, if you have that type of leverage from a bank can average for every dollar they can lend out 15, you got to have some rules and regulation on it. Well, they went to 30 times or 40 times. So the whole damn thing just blew up on them, and everybody's wondering why banks don't trust one another, why you can't go and get a loan, because banks are holding on to their money.
Because they're afraid they ain't going to get it.
That's right.
And the number one reason why they ain't going to get it, because they know the folks ain't, the common man ain't got no more money.
He ain't got no more money.
Because what he had was credit, and them credit, I heard today on CNBC that it's like 75% of all the credit cards are actually owned or run by like five banks.
That's it. It's our families.
Meaning they can just break you whenever they say it's over.
It's over.
Kneel.
That's it.
Because they said five or six banks control all the credit cards.
That's it.
Like I was telling my children, I got a credit card. I may have $10,000, $20,000 worth of credit cards in my pocket, but I don't mean I'll max them out.
That's it.
But a lot of folks are maxed out.
They're all maxed out.
And they're at the mercy of their credit card people.
They're at the mercy of the
credit
card.
They're at the mercy because they're going to pay it.
Oh, they're going to pay it. Or else, if we go into a 25-35% type of depression, they'll have a problem. The credit card people have a problem. They just have to write that stuff off. And basically what you're going to have, somewhere down the line, they will try to wipe off a lot of this debt and try to get the consumer back into buying again.
But it could take 10 years. And maybe a World War III to do this.
Well, I tell you this, you're right about that.
It may take that because I'm going to take a phone call. I didn't want to go into this to the end of the show, but let me just flow into it. Do you think that since when President Obama, President-elect Obama becomes president, that's when Israel will go into Iran to take out their nukes?
I think if they do that, then we open up. Then it's a free for all. I think that it's not something to be played with lightly.
Because everybody said they don't want Iran to get nukes, but they will be the power in that region if they get nukes.
I don't so much agree with that. I understand the United States has its hegemony and dominance. I say this: give them three nukes.
Mm-hmm.
I'd give Iran four nukes and say, listen, Israel got five. So if you decide to send two nukes over there, you history. Now anybody's a fool. If you only got four bullets, you're not gonna go get somebody. Somebody's got 1,000.
But I don't think ahead of us, I don't think...
he's not that insane.
Yeah, in fact, Ahmadinejad, I came to say his name, he's not going to be there much longer. He'll be out in about 6 months of the year. He'll be gone. They'll replace him with somebody else. But the bottom line is, it's Iran wants power. They are the big dog in the region. We know that, especially if they get the nukes. But the point is, it's not in their best interest to blow up Israel because it's mutual annihilation.
That's
come
exactly
on, people.
That's the whole point. It's initial annihilation, and it's over with for them. So, I understand the Persian mindset that Persians were, you know.
They want power. They want to be, everybody wants to be loved. They want to be recognized. So you give them a little recognition. You work it out and say, if you go any further, we got a nuke. We're just both going to get blown up. This is stupid, people.
That's it.
This is stupid, but. It could happen.
Oh, I wouldn't put it, but listen, men are mad, and you have a situation that arouses where things can get really out of hand, especially in the mismatch. See, Iran has basically been, its economy has been mismatched. Those mullahs came in teaching a theocracy, that's a religion. They don't have, listen, how can a country that rich not have a gas refinery? They import gasoline. That's the dumbest damn other thing I've had.
A caller, you're on Viewpoint Live. Sorry to hold you up.
Yeah, I'm on Viewpoint. Can you hear me?
Yeah, go right ahead.
Hello?
Can you hear me?
know, girls, it's hard to find a guy that really blows your mind. And you just dig everything he does, like when he gives you that great big special hug and that heavy kiss. Girls, you know the kind. The kind that's in the wrong place at the wrong time, and it really turns you on. Well, I had a guy like that. And then that time that happens to all of us, we had an argument. And like all, and I mean all us girls, I said some pretty dumb things like get lost. I don't want to see you anymore. But he was cool. He just stood there looking so hurt. And he said, if that's the way you want it. And he split. And I just stood there looking dumb and let that man walk right out of my life. And I've been as evil as a wet hen ever since. I told myself I wasn't gonna sweat it. But I did. Oh, he was inside of me. And my thoughts, my dreams, every place I went, I saw his face. And my friends, they knew. I know they knew. And then one evening I was standing at the bus stop and I heard a voice behind me say, hi, baby. Oh, I just fell all apart inside because I hadn't heard that voice in such a long time. I turned around, and there he was, looking good. Oh, I just can't tell you how good that man looked to me. And as I stood there trying to maintain myself, he asked me if I had a few minutes. I really wanted to tell him that I had a lifetime, but I couldn't blow my cool. We stopped at a cozy little place. And I guess the shock of seeing him made me order a martini, because that's something that I've never done before. But I thought I needed something stronger than coffee to lean on. Oh, the music was soft, and the lights were low, and that drink had started going to my head. He hadn't said anything about us, so I knew it was my move. And it had to be now. I could feel my nerves building. I couldn't let him go. Not this time. Not this time. So I took his hand, looked him straight into the eye, and I said,
maybe, maybe, if I cry. Greetings. I'd like to invite you out to the Summit of the Moors, August 16th through the 18th, 2013, located in Jacksonville, Florida. 3 days of executing and planning of executive plans for 25-year agenda, operating as an economic unit. The presenters will be Shem L. of the Tamarite 2 Project, Dr. Ali Muhammad and Minister Inki of the Black Genetic Tour, Sundiana Amma L., Professor Asif Deanham L., Tahaka Amana L., Abundance Child, Fatima, the Alchemist Shabazz, Messiah L., and more. Topics will be the execution of urban geoponics, creating independent distribution systems, creating independent economic systems, genetics, private security force, the wholesale and manufacturing of natural products, Morristown, creating one in every state, Morris Eastside Farms, putting one in every state. You do not want to miss this summit. It is very enlightening, empowering, and most of all, it's applicable. Everything that we talk about, we do. Summit of the Moors, August 16th through the 18th. Log on to www.summitofthemoors.com. You can register for free. The summit is always free. You can also get your hotel room, which will be on the river at the Wyndham Hotel. That's www.summitofthemoors.com. The summits are always free. See you at the summit.
Try to cover this thing from every conceivable angle,
We still have a little bit more left to go. But if you got questions or comments, go ahead and raise your hand, open up the line so you get in. But we're going to be coming back with Dr. Lee Warren as he describes for you and give you some details and information on dealing with the debt crisis that we're in today. And make no mistake about it, we are still in a crisis. You got to get out of this thing of thinking that, well, since I don't feel nothing, everything's all right. Everything appears to be okay. I go to the grocery store. The prices was $3 a day, but they went up to $4.99. But I'll pay a little bit more money for that. That's okay. Now, you got to realize that something is wrong. Okay. If something is wrong, you got to pay attention to the indicators. Look at the weather. Watch the animals. That's very, very important because the animals will give you a signal to what's coming. It's kind of like the San Francisco earthquake before it hit. All the jackrabbits in the town with the running out of the city, and the people are looking, ooh, look at all the rabbits. Where they going? Look at that. I ain't never seen like this. What is this? Ooh, it's amazing. And they did not know that we had these many jackrabbits. All of a sudden, earthquake hit. One of the biggest earthquakes in recorded ancient story. The animals already knew they were gone. But when you see things happening and changing in the animal kingdom, because they're going to give you the signal, then you know something is wrong. It's time to start doing something different. You cannot continue to ignore the environment because your environment is very, very important. You are connected to your environment. You're connected to it. Your environment is alive just like you. A tree can see you just like you see it. But most of us don't understand that. Leaves, the branches, they got 1,000 eyes. They can see you. The animals can see you. This is a very, very wonderful creation that was created, but we are here now. We have a problem because we made a mistake and we created something and put on this planet that we should not have tampered with. And this thing has caused the entire planet to be polluted. That was a mistake that we made. Now, we'll have to go back to the laboratories and have to redo something else and hope to creation that we can survive this thing because we have a very, very serious problem inside the United States of America Corporation. I talk to brothers and sisters all over the United States on a regular basis, on a daily basis, and I work with them in putting their situation together and alleviating their problems. Sometimes I get behind. I have so many calls coming in, and I work with so many people, and I may not get a chance to talk to everybody all the time. So what I'm asking is, when you contact me, make sure that you know exactly what you want. If you just want to call to chew the fat or whatever, do not call me. Chew the fat. Cut on all the lights in the house. Go look in the mirror. Go on to chew the fat. There. Don't call me with that because we're here to deal with people who have solutions so that we can a problem so that we can deal with the solution to the problem, and I'm going to the next person. Okay? Help me out with that. Because this is an ongoing thing. We got people with mortgage problems. We got student loan debt. We got credit card. We got jail. We got court. We got police stops. We got brutality. We got all of these things that happen on a daily basis. And I am not an attorney. This information that we put out is not for legal means. Okay? What we do is we deal with brothers and sisters that contact us, that have the situation, and we discuss it and come to the rudiments of the solution to the problem. that on a daily basis. Okay? Then remember that.
You see, the elitists have programmed the average U.S. citizen into believing that if you can get a college degree, you're automatically going to have the good life. It's kind of like your safety net or whatever. But that's so far from the truth, okay? Because most people who go to school, they really don't think for themselves, and they're not understanding, well, that millions of jobs are leaving this country, you know, every month. Everything has been going to China and other parts of the world, okay? I mean, think about it. Why would some company want to pay you $20 an hour to do something where they can pay some foreigner, you know what, 30 cents an hour to do the same job, okay? This is what we're headed to, man. Okay, say you do get a college degree. Say you go through the gauntlet and you finally get a job with your college degree, making about $80,000 a year. Well, you'll be figuring out, you'll be saying to yourself, everything is good and well. But then you have to remember that inflation, with inflation coming up, rising gas prices, rising food prices, the maintenance you have to put on your car every year, your personal expenses, your work expenses, any other kind of miscellaneous expenses. That's not even counting how many kids you have. That's not even counting any type of emergency you have where you may have to take out large sums of money. That's not even taking into account your credit card bills, because, you know, everybody thinks, you know, credit is free money. Okay? So after all that said and done, your $80,000 a year, and, oh, I forgot the 35% tax rate that you will be part of. So after all of that, you know, your $80,000 is probably reduced to maybe around about $30,000. So you done picked up all these student loans. You done went through the grind of 4 years of college for this $80,000 a year job, which is now $30,000 a year. You went through all that trouble for $30,000 a year. Okay? This is one of the things that Americans fail to understand. Okay? You can't just look at the bright side of everything. You can't just look at the pros of everything. There are good and bad to everything. Okay? And especially in this day and age where everything is so shaky, I'm not trusting Wall Street. I'm not trusting a college degree. I'm not trusting none of this stuff because it's too much work involved and the risk is just too high. Yes, a broken clock works twice a day, but society has been financially set up, economically set up against the average U.S. citizen. Okay, the unemployment numbers, which is like 9 million, which is actually probably around about 20 million. But what Obama and his cronies decided to do is they decided to not count, take into account the ones that stopped looking for work because they just figured there's just no hope. Okay, you can't do that. The stats are the stats. All right. And I'll take another example. I live in Florida, okay? You have the four major colleges, Florida, Florida State, Miami, and Central Florida. You combine the student attendance of those four universities, that's probably around about 120,000 students. 120,000. I guess take into account your state or community colleges, that's probably about 130,000, maybe even 140,000. Now, last month, the United States only produced about 110,000 jobs. And that's the entire country. So you take $110,000 jobs that the United States produced overall last month against the 140,000 students you have in one state. What do you get? Very few winners and a whole lot of losers. And then if you do get your degree, then you got to go through the gauntlet just trying to get that degree. Okay, you're talking about maybe 300-400 applicants per job. So, you know, nothing is etched in stone here. Okay, and plus, you know, like I said before, the real jobs have gone overseas. The real producing manufacturing jobs are gone. So how is the United States of America supposed to keep existing on this fluff and stuff, pencil pushing economy? Okay, how can a computer programmer produce stuff? You just putting together flashy graphics on the screen. I ain't saying nothing. There's nothing wrong with that, but in the long run, that's, you know, being a computer programmer is not going to really do too much. I mean, it does have its place, but if a country can't produce its own goods, then it ceases to exist. But this is the plan that the elitists wanted, was to deliberately take the jobs overseas, take the wealth out of this country so everybody's depending on the government. Okay? They're trying to bring in this this 21st century feudalistic style society, and it's working. Okay, this is one of the concepts or one of the illusions that they have to use to make people even more programmed than before, is to make you believe that going to college is the key. But in actuality, that's just another step into being dependent on the government. Okay, because like I said before, you can't find a job. You gotta depend on the government for student loans. Okay, and then when you can't find a job with your degree, you have to rely on the government for some kind of social services just to stay alive. This is deliberate. Okay, but most Americans don't have any intellectual curiosity. They don't have any critical thinking skills. They don't think about the long-term plans that these rich trillionaires are implanting. Okay? If you thought the Middle Ages was bad, you ain't seen nothing yet. Okay? I believe maybe about 15, 20 years in a lot of this country still existing. You're going to wish for a middle-aged tight lifestyle. Okay? You got all these kids who don't waste their energy for nothing. This country does not have any more goods. Everything's coming back half-assed. You know, so where do we go? I tell you where we go. We go to the meat grinders. We go to the FEMA camps. We go to fighting everybody for a grain of overcooked rice. We go to fighting your neighbor for pork and beans. Or just for shelter. Because that's where we're headed. We're headed towards a Mad Max society. Where I'm going to get mine in the hell with you at any cost. And I'm telling you, in the grand scheme of things, a college degree ain't going to save you. Okay? That's just an illusion to keep you going. Okay? Because somebody has to be fed into the machine. And I think, and I truly believe that the U.S. citizen is the prototype machine slave, because your average American is scared, frightened, unimaginative, materialistic, and shallow. This is the prototype citizen of the 21st century. But of course, everything, you know, the prototype has to be tested here in America before it can be shipped all over the world. And the prototype's working well, and the rest of the world will be following suit. Okay? I'm not surprised at this, and it's only going to get worse. Maybe 60 years ago, having a college degree meant something, but in this watered-down, trashed-down society/economy, it don't mean dark shit. Okay? It doesn't mean shit. You know, what's a computer programmer going to, you know, do for the public? Okay, yes, you can create shiny graphics on TV for people to be hypnotized to. That's about it. But anyway, that's all I got to say about it. The average American citizen is dumb as shit, and they don't understand, you know, what's...
One more time, Mose, don't forget, for those of you who are trying to do your estate, now, inside the archives, you have your estate manual, you have your estate letter, and you have all the other supporting documents. And for those of you who want to get out there and place that thing in the hands of your employee to stop them from taking taxes out your check, go right to www.newfreehelpgroup.com. Once you get there, look around. If you click on the letters under the picture, a little drop-down menu, come back and give you a little additional information on that. But before you do anything, call me, Tarka Amana L. Bay, at area code 904-303-9061 before 7 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. Also, for those of you who want to set up your will, all that information is in there as well, right there in the Talkers Master Library. Don't forget, www.newfreehelpgroup.com, okay? All right.
The thing is going to intensify, as you have now, as a result of Americans not being able to buy. What's happening now in China, this thing is rippling back throughout. The whole world is tied together. China was the one that provided all the what? All the goods and stuff at Walmart. Well, what's happening is that Americans couldn't buy as a result of threat of job security, threat of the value of their house has been lost, and finally their pension and IRA have been lost. Well, they quit spending. And what happened was China had to lay off, factories closed, thousands of factories closed. You got, what, 25, 30 million Chinamen out of work. They're riding over there. Now, that's over in the east. All the factories in China have just about shut down and throughout Asia have shut down. Now, the export nations such as Japan, they can't sell. Honda is down 30%. Taiwan's down 40%. Now, even the Germans, which the Mercedes, they got Mercedes packed up on the docks. BMW, they can't sell BMWs now. So they're laying off. So what you got now in Europe and in the East, these export countries that export stuff to America. America was a great bazaar where Americans would go out and spill their last dime buying these foreign products. What happened? They went broke. And these other companies would have the factories and suppliers. They all broke too. See, so what happened? The whole system collapsed as a result of Wall Street selling those phony bonds to the whole world. That's and right. The bank collapsed. And as a result, the Americans are too dumb as a result of the press that those banks have to be nationalized and taken over and broken up into pieces. But these are bloodline banks. You know, we start talking about J.P. Morgan and Chase and Bear Stearns and the Lehman Brothers. All these your major banks, your Bank of America, Wells, these are bloodline banks. Very powerful people own and have shares in them. So to take the banks over, the stockholders would lose all their investments. And lose everything, the bondholders, and then divide the banks up into five different pieces. Then these people in the Empire State, they would lose their power. So this is the reason why they have had Obama. They told Obama, don't be messing with those banks. You give them a little bit more money, and they have continued to give them money. But for instance, as far as the blue collar, the factories, they pushed Chrysler into what? Bankruptcy, and General Motors is next. So what happened is the blue collar worker, you're talking about unemployment. Roughly, I'd say between 35% and maybe 45%. We probably won't hit one and two, but you have three to four families in one house and one person working.
But ironically, Dr. Warren, is that we have this high unemployment, the stock market is going up.
Well, that's the Kool-Aid. They're telling people that the market is up, and they think that the economy is going to turn in the last quarter, third and fourth quarter of 2010. In other words, Obama said, well, the thing is possibly going to turn around. You can't turn this thing around. There's just too much debt in the system. And the more money they print up, the worse it gets, because this is the problem. Obama put his first budget in, and his first budget is $3 trillion. $3 trillion is the budget this year. Now, next year is another $2 or $3 trillion. Now, that's $6 trillion. Well, who gonna buy the bonds? Americans don't have no savings. The Europeans won't buy the bonds. The Chinese guy has one. They have $1.2 trillion. They said, no, we don't want the paper. See, now, well, we want some gold or some silver. And the same thing, everybody's refusing to buy the paper. So what happens is the Federal Reserve is buying our bonds, which, as a result, is causing to put more money in circulation. So we're gonna have huge hyperinflation.
Right.
There's no way out. The only way out is for Obama to get on the TV screen and say, listen, fellow Americans,
we have made a big mess of this thing. And the best way we can do is like a horse that's broken his leg, you got to put it under. We're going to put the country and everybody into bankruptcy in 3 or 4 years, like they did Chrysler, and wipe everybody's debt and start all over again. But see, if they did that, they'd wipe out like powerful families,
right,
wealth and stuff. And said, no, we ain't playing that.
Right.
See, now we'll save ourselves. And the people, or the little people, they, we ain't going to worry about that. Now, a good movie to watch is, you remember Titanic when it was sinking?
Mm-hmm.
The poor people were down the stairs. They were down in third, fourth, and fifth class. You know what they did to them folks? They locked the gates on them. And
right.
The lifeboats were only for the wealthy. And they
mm-hmm.
fought among themselves.
Right.
See? So then my point to you today, folks, is if you intend to save anything, you better get some silver. These silver quarters and dimes that are hard to come by. In Europe or whatever, because everybody now, you know what they're doing to their paper? They everybody now is inflating their currency. So everybody's currency is being inflated around the world. The Swift, even now the Swift market, Swift banks have lent all the money to the Eastern Europeans, Poland, Czechoslovakia, Hungary, Bulgaria, and got them in the real estate boom. The stuff blew up on them. Now, they can't pay the loan back because they borrowed and francs or euros, their currency has fallen what? Off the cliff, so they can't pay the loan back. So these banks are all in trouble. Banks around the world
right.
are insolvent. That's basically what we're talking about. Everybody's dead broke. And they are the nations of the world, the G20, he said, the only solution they got is to lower interest rates and print up more money.
But can you explain it again to our conservative, so-called conservative friends who think that if we get a conservative Republican president, it's going to turn things around?
There's no turning this thing around. The debt is humongous, folks. I mean, how can you take – listen, can you imagine $3 trillion that Obama – well, Obama, this is part of the Bush administration, but that's $3 trillion. Next year, you got to do the same thing. In other words, what it is, the economy is so laden with debt, they've been hit with steroids. Think of a patient that has a heart attack. They've been hit with these paddles. The patient would jump up. They say, stand clear. They hit it with their 20,000 volts. The body would jump off the thing. They say, stand back. We hit them again. Bam. If that don't do it, they take a needle and it goes straight to the what?
Heart.
And pump in that adrenaline. They say, stand back. We hit it one more time. The guy may wake up. For a few hours and die. That's where we at.
Well, I'm saying we got to get beyond the politics because it's not the state government, the local governments, everybody, and people, just regular people, are bankrupt.
Everything is bankrupt. We live in the state of Illinois. We have 11.2% sales. I can't comprehend. I go to the store and spend $10. That's $1 tax. That's amazing. This is crazy. And you can begin to see now at some point that people are going to be in a snap because wages are not going up. Everything is going up except for what?
Wages.
So that means at some point people are going to snap because the wages, the lifestyle has to be drastically cut back.
So you say the American dream is over?
It's over with. If they wave the wand tomorrow morning and wipe out everybody's debt, and said, we're going to start over again. Very few people would go into debt. They said, no, you fooled me once. Well, I'm not going to that much type of debt. They would never spend like they spent before.
But so are we ready to really change our lifestyle?
Well, see, what's going to change the lifestyle is pain.
Pain.
The only thing that causes people to change is pain.
That's right.
See, when you put enough pain on somebody, they change.
That's right.
See what I'm saying? You remember the movie Cool Hand Luke?
Right.
Mm-hmm. He said, boss man, he said, my mind is straight now. My mind is straight. So they put some pain on them.
Right.
And see, the system collapses. And this is what Obama is trying to give us Kool-Aid. They're trying to soothe the pain.
Okay, Moses, we're back. We're winding down now. If anybody have questions or comments, go ahead and raise your hand. And we'll open up the lines so you can let us know what's on your mind. However, we have presented to you this evening this thing from every conceivable angle in part two about your student loan debt. I want to give you a graphic depiction of the student loan situation and a graphic depiction of the entire surrounding circumstances inside America. Now, these plugs that are running tonight, this is back in 2009, but keep in mind, look at, if all you got to do is go look at the, if you get on on your computer, type in prices in the grocery store 2009, and then prices in the grocery store 2013. That will give you a full, clear understanding of what is going on and what has transpired. You see, you can take a pot of water and put it on the stove, nice and cool. Don't cut on no fire. Take a frog and put him in that water. He'll sit there. But now you take that frog out of that water, cut that pot on, boil that water, and take and put that frog in that boiling water, he'll jump out. But if you take a cool pot of water, put on the stove, put the frog in the cool water, and cut on just a little heat, he'll sit there in that water, and the temperature will gradually increase, and he'll sit there, and he will boil to death. That's the situation that we are in. We going to and fro, we doing this, we doing that, and the situation is gradually sneaking up on us. All of a sudden, boom, we're looking around, well, oh my goodness, I don't have this. I should have done this, and I should have done that, and I should have done the other. But it's too late now. Your foot is in the stirrup, and the horse is running. We got people who never had nothing in their life. They've always been poor. It's their day now. They ain't got no problem. The people who supposed to have been living good and I got this degree and that degree and living on this certain lifestyle and stuff like that, we got a problem because I have to adjust to never having had anything in my life and I do co-mangle and survive. You have a problem, especially those people who live this exorbitant lifestyle and think they got something with all of this worthless paper in their possession. We have a problem in America. There is absolutely no doubt about it. However, on August the 16th through the 18th, I suggest wherever you are in America, you come down here in Jacksonville, Florida, to the Summit of the Moors, right here in the Wyndham Hotel, and we get a chance to meet each other, you get a chance to meet us, and you get a chance to look at and be able to be in position to deal with some solutions to this problem that we have in this country. We're not just sitting here in the boat and ain't nobody doing nothing. I get on here as much as I possibly can to provide some kind of solution to my people where they can survive. And the brothers and sisters have an archive. They're all over the United States, and they are working. They're doing different things, but there's more in the archive than just documentation. There's information concerning your ancient story. There's information concerning books. There are whole websites in there. There's information on survival, what to do, when to do it, what time of day to do it, how to do it, what devices to use to do it. All of that information is there, and it is available to you. Go to www.newfreehelpgroup.com. If you can't get there, call me. We get you there. Okay? So you can get that information because we're in the information age. We have a problem. We need to get a solution to the problem. That's the bottom line. So what I want to encourage you all to do, one other thing now, for those of you who are on your social sites. Now, I've been banned by Facebook for 30 days for befriending my people because they don't want this kind of information out. Also, I can no longer send out any invitations to my events. They stopped that, too. It's all kind of stuff going on to try to keep you from being informed. But I'm sorry. I'm going to have to inform you. They had to come up with something else. So stay tuned for our broadcast. We're going to be coming back at a later date. We're going to be dealing with the mortgage situation from a whole different perspective. So make sure you get in there so that we can tell you what to do with that situation and how to get up out of that. You know, because we have to eliminate these contracts. You got to get out of these contracts. You got to get rid of the contracts. You got to get out of that. Now, on Wednesday night, we'll be discussing contract law right here on Blog Talk Radio with the Moorish American Government. And after I get all the statistical information, I will be posting it on your social site so you'll know exactly where we are, when to tune in, what the topic is going to be about. But on Wednesday night, I teach contract law. So make sure that you are there so that you will be able to get this information. Okay? Send your friend request. If you're on Facebook, LinkedIn, MySpace, Black Planet, wherever you are, send a friend request to Tahaka Amana L. Bay. TaraHakaAmanaEl, and then BEY. Go ahead and send me that friend request on Facebook. I'll grant it. That'll give you access to my wall. If you want to talk to me in person, call me before 7 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, area code 904-303-9061. If the phone rang and I don't answer, that means I'm already talking to somebody, and I do the best I can. But I just keep trying. Now, I'll answer the phone. You see, we ain't no debt collector. We don't do that. Okay. We're in the helping business, so go ahead and call me, and then I'll answer the phone, because that's what I do, and I talk to people all day long over America. We make sure, and we ain't going to be no long, drawn-out conversation. We get straight to the point, get it over with, next, that's how we do it. Okay? Now, for free articles that's mentioned on this broadcast, the 14th Amendment Exposed, as well as the Commerce Game and How to Play, Secrets of America, the U.S. Bankruptcy, and the Moors, send me an email request. Just say, Tahaka, send me the free articles mentioned on your broadcast to TaraHaka53@hotmail.com. And I will rush that right on to you. Okay? We have come to the end of this hour, this broadcast tonight. And I hope you all got something out of this. I recommend that you listen to this show over and over and over so you can glean all the information down on it. When you cut it on, make sure you got your paper and pencil handy so you can start writing different things that you hear. Because this is vital for you to keep these records so that you can survive this thing, because we're talking about a very, very serious problem that's going to affect people all over the United States. I am concerned about my people first. Everybody else second. That ain't got nothing to do with racism. That's what I'm supposed to do, because that's what everybody else on the planet does. I don't know how my people keep getting this confused. And I ain't studying no more. I'm just going to tell the truth. I've been your host, Tahaka Amana L. Bay, and until next time, we're going to deal with the mortgage thing. Y'all have a good night, okay?
One more time, Mose. Don't forget, for those of you who are trying to do your estate, now, inside Tahaka Archives, you have your estate manual, you have your estate letter, and you have all the other supporting documents. And for those of you who want to get out there and place that thing in the hands of your employee to stop it from taking taxes out your check, go right to www.newfreehelpgroup.com. Once you get there, look around. If you kick on the letters under the picture, a little drop-down menu will come back and give you a little additional information on that. But before you do anything, call me, Tahaka Amana L. Bay, at area code 904-303-9061 before 7 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. Also, for those of you who want to set up your will, all that information is in there as well, right there in the Talkers Master Library. Don't forget, www.newfreehelpgroup.com, okay? All right.